Good morning and welcome, everyone. Today is Monday, May 15th, 2017. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for a land use hearing. I'm going to read some things. If you have cell phone, it would be probably a good time to put it on silence or vibrate. If you need an agenda, I think we hopefully have those available in the foyer. We're going to go here for a little while, and if there's a need, if we go too long, we'll take a break and use the restroom and facilities. But I'm going to read through this statement that I'm required to do, and then we'll get this hearing underway. So this meeting of the Josephine County Board of Commissioners will be conducted according to the Josephine County Land Use Hearing Rules found in Article 31 of the Josephine County Rural Land Development Code and Section 197.763 of the Oregon Revised Statutes, which govern the conduct of all public hearings. A summary of the rules are as follows. Today, number one, today's hearing is an appeal hearing from a decision made by the Josephine County Planning Director. Since the decision was made without a public hearing, state law requires the hearing to be conducted as a de novo, completely new, open evidentiary hearing. The board is authorized to review all testimony and evidence submitted to the planning director in making the decision. Item number two is the planning staff will identify and explain the criteria and standards applicable to this request. Item number three, testimony and evidence is to be directed to the criteria and standards. If you feel other criteria or standards apply and are not identified, you must raise the issue to the chair for a ruling. If the chair rules that additional standards apply, then testimony and evidence may be directed to them. That's a really important one, item number three. And so hopefully people understand that one. Item number four is clearly raise and explain your issues in this hearing in order to be understood by the board. Number five, before conclusion of the hearing, any participant may request for a continuance to submit new evidence or testimony. The board must decide to either grant the continuance or keep the record open. In either case, the period of time must be at least 7 days. During the time of the open record, anyone may submit additional written testimony or evidence. Item number six, all persons testifying are considered a witness unless the person asks to be recognized as a party and the chair rules the person has party status. Party status is established in three ways. Item number one, anyone who receives official mailed notice and testifies orally or in writing in this hearing. Way two, anyone who testifies orally and or in writing in this hearing who did not receive official mailed notice but establishes the use or enjoyment of their property is adversely affected by impacts from this proposed use or development that is different from the public at large. And way number three, someone who is aggrieved by an adverse decision. The chair will wait until you finish testifying to make a ruling on your party status. Item number seven, participants are obliged to know and follow the rules and procedures. The planning staff present has a copy of the rules if anyone should want to see them. This item on the agenda is, as stated before, an appeal of the community director's decision. Item number nine, does anyone object to the jurisdiction of the board to hear this matter? Item number 10, does any member of the board wish to abstain from this matter? Mr. Morgan, you need to make a decision one way or the other. Are you going to participate?
Yes, but right. I do need to announce ex parte contact.
Okay.
At the appropriate time.
Now could work. Yeah. Earlier, better than later.
Yes. So I had ex parte contact with Mr. West about a year before I took office. Met him. Yeah, we were talking about various things, land use things and stuff like that. I know this topic briefly came up. I don't remember the gist of the entire conversation. And then a month or so ago, we were randomly placed at the same table at a fundraiser for foster kids, and at which time we had no contact regarding this case at all.
Okay. Item number 11, the Josephine County Rural Land Development Code sets time limits for testimony. Time limits, I'm going to read those really quickly. The staff report doesn't have a time limit, but that's the first item on the agenda that we'll go through. Item number two is proponents. Applicant's case has 10 minutes. Applicant's witnesses, 5 minutes each. Any other in favor testifying, public at large, is 5 minutes. Questions of the staff directed to the chairperson, 5 minutes. Item number three is opponent's representative, if one designated, has 10 minutes. Otherwise, all witnesses in opposition, expert in nature, have 5 minutes. Others in opposition have 5 minutes. Questions of the staff directed to the chairperson are 5 minutes. Item number four is applicant's rebuttal. If necessary, there's 10 minutes. Opponent's surrebuttal, if a representative is designated, 5 minutes, and then all others are given 5 minutes. The summations of the applicant and opponents are both for 5 minutes. Item number six, there'll be a discussion following and then a closing of the hearing. So at the close of the hearing, a decision shall be made in the form of findings with the presiding officer or hearing body designating who shall prepare the findings. Item number 13 is the criteria for this decision in this hearing shall be presented by the planning staff as part of the staff report, and I'm going to leave that up to Ms. Schmelzer to direct how that should go forward. And that's where we're at. So item number one on the order of procedure. So Ms. Schmelzer.
My name is Julie Schmelzer. I'm the Director of Community Development for Josephine County. And as you know, we're here for an appeal on Brimstone Gulch. Our county planner, Jeff Page, is the staff person who actually processed this case. So he will be presenting to you. He also has some experts, witnesses here as well, in case you have questions for them. He has a representative from ODFW and from the Department of Forestry. So if you don't have any questions for me, we'll just have Jeff proceed.
Great.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
I'm Jeff Page, Planner 2 in the Josephine County Community Development Department, the Planning Division. I'm here to present the staff report for the Brimstone Natural Resource Company appeal decision of the director's decision. Start off here. Here's an aerial photo of the property, the subject property. It's a little hard to see, but you can see Brimstone Gulch going kind of through the left part of it. The outline, you can see the outline property lines on the outside. You can see a pond that's just there to the north of it. And the Brimstone Gulch there. A little brief background here. In December 2014, a complaint was received by the Planning Division for mining without permits and the unauthorized removal of trees and vegetation on the property within the Brimstone Gulch riparian corridor. A site visit by staff confirmed the removal of trees and vegetation within the corridor and a violation was opened on the property. In February of 2015, an application was received by Brimstone Natural Resource Company and the Planning Division to allow placer mining within the stream banks of Brimstone Gulch.
I'm going to ask a quick question here, and so the board should feel free. I don't want to interrupt your rhythm, but who filed the complaint? How did we become aware of the issue?
I don't have the complaint. I don't have the violation filed with me, so I don't have that information.
Okay.
The proposal was to plaster mine 4.6 acres of land divided into five sections and the allowance to come within 1 foot of the ordinary high water level on each side of Brimstone Gulch. The application was denied due to incomplete information and inadequate repair and restoration maintenance plan. The second application for the same proposal was submitted later that year in December. The information submitted and the repair and restoration maintenance plan were again deemed incomplete. The applicant failed to submit an acceptable repairing plan within the state statute timelines, and the application expired. And that was the second application. And then a third application proposal was submitted in November of 2016. This time the proposal was approved with conditions. An appeal application was received on March 10, 2017, without a statement of appeal. A statement of appeal was received late Friday afternoon, May 12th.
I understand that didn't come in on time.
Yes. this aspirate code is supposed to come into the field of application.
Hold that thought.
Yeah. Mind repeating that? So the appeal application was supposed to come in at a particular time?
A statement of appeal was supposed to accompany the appeal application. And we just got that on Friday. It was like 4:40 p.m.
What's your question?
My question would be, in what standard practice with your with these, are statements ever accepted later? Is it you meet the deadline or not?
Deadline should be deadline.
Yeah.
So it's really important that you guys, you'll get your 5 minutes. The only people talking right now are those with mics. But we'll get you. That's for sure. We'll definitely get there.
Okay. So on our current appeal form, which is the one they use, it does not ask for a statement for appeal. It's pretty vague, but the code itself says they need a statement of appeal. So typically what happens is staff proceeds blindly, kind of guessing what they're supposed to do. We'll usually call and say, hey, you haven't given us a clear definition as to why you're appealing. We've since revised the form about a month ago to make sure it's clear that people understand they need to submit that, but the code does require a statement of appeal.
Well, the form doesn't explicitly say. I'm confused as to why there's an appeal of a decision to approve. So that's what the statement would clarify in the appeal, is saying, thank you very much, but your conditions is probably the sticking point.
Exactly. Okay. That's what I presumed when I wrote the staff report. Conditions were what was being appealed, but we didn't have any information specifically.
Okay.
So being that the form did not specifically give a time frame for that or give parameters, would it not be appropriate to have those details, or do we just ask for them again today?
I don't think there's any restriction on what they can submit today, so I think that's where it's going to come. But I'm glad that planning has fixed that challenge.
Yes.
Preparing review ordinance. The preparing ordinance allows for some activities and development to occur within the preparing quarters, provided they are authorized through a site plan review and planning. The review is identified and determined that the proposal complies with local, state, and federal regulations, or can comply by the placement of conditions. The decision to deny a proposal or approve of conditions is based upon the coordination with other agencies and departments.
So before you move on, the element of development, so it talks about that in here, in referencing the things that potentially could be developed, this feels like it may not qualify, or what is that? You need to give me some guidance on how we're evaluating development relative to the operation being proposed.
Well, the code does mention aggregate monitoring, which is bullet point number 3 right there, between the banks of the stream. It doesn't specifically mention placer mining, and it's kind of vaguely worded in that aggregate mining between the banks of the stream would kind of allude that it's in the stream itself.
Certainly seems to be below the high water mark or something like that. Commissioner Morgan?
What I found in the file as well as inconsistency is to not necessarily the class of the stream, but the setback requirements. For instance, David Haidt's letter from December 2015 from the ODFW mentions a 25-foot requirement, not the 50 that is later in later forms kind of required. So even from outside agencies, I found an inconsistency on what they were asking. The first one said 25, and then later on, the last letter of response to the last application, not the appealed application, but the last application plan, said all of a sudden a strict 50 foot.
Right, right. In bullet point number 4 right there, there could be an
conspiracy?
Well, the proposal was to go with up to 1 foot of the ordinary high water level.
Right.
And then, so the exception was made as per the code, allowing them just up to 25 feet, rather than the proposed 1 foot.
Okay, so the original is 1 foot, so they would be able to go... Okay. So you're going to give them an additional 25 feet. So they only have to go 25 feet from the high water line, right? And that's what
they can't be within 25 feet.
And that's designating the riparian area down from 50 feet.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, now there would be a 25-foot buffer rather than a 50-foot buffer.
So how far does that go to the edge of the claim, I guess, or so in other words, does that only leave them, I guess, does that leave them adequate room to mine beyond that 25 feet?
Well, that's up to them to decide whether it's adequate.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So, but it does establish 25-foot riparian along the street.
Yes.
Plus a foot.
No, I guess.
Mark, appreciate this. This is your first time, and you're doing a great job. We'll get through this. So.
So, conditions of approval. These are just a couple of many conditions that were placed on the property. Riparian landscape is approved by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife prior to the issuance of a permit issued by planning. And for planning, the issuance of a development permit is the authorization for any use, whether it's a house or an activity. So that's the final authorization. So that's what that's referring to. There will be no plaster mining within 25 feet of Brimstone Gulch. Fish passage deficiencies regarding the existing culvert in Brimstone Gulch are resolved, and that a letter of compliance is received by planning from the Oregon Department of Forestry stating that all Forest Practices Act violations occurring on the property have been resolved. During the public notification period, the Planning Division received 6 written comments in opposition to the proposal for plaster mining activities. The areas of concern include degradation of the environment, water quality issues in both wells and streams, harm to fish and wildlife, noise, truck traffic impacts, and decreased property values. And just to note, most of the issues were addressed in the conditions of approval. Finally, these are the possible board actions that can be taken at this time. The Oregon Department of Forestry and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife are both here for comment if you have any questions. Do you have any further questions for me?
I have lots of questions. It's a matter of the timing and the when and the what's appropriate, I guess.
It really should just be directed at your staff report at this time. If there's specific things, I think there's should be adequate time through the hearing, and we'll be able to address staff again,
Okay. Actually
at any time.
All right, so one of the questions I would have is related to the aggregate mining. In the report, it said that the planning staff was essentially allowing the plaster mining to kind of fall into that category. The specifications of aggregate allows mining within the river bank or the stream banks. But for this, we're putting a 25-foot riparian setback in place. Why the discrepancy of the 25-foot? If it's being related to the aggregate, that's allowed in the stream bank.
Well, the proposal is not between the stream banks and the...
I would counter that to arrive at a stream bank, you would cause damage within the 25 foot to get to the stream bank.
Right, that's true. And so that's why I pointed out that it's curiously written that way. I guess the question is why are they allowed to come within 25 feet rather than the 50 foot mark?
Well,
No, my question is, why are they not allowed to go to the stream bank if you related it to aggregate mining per your report?
There's no provision in the code that would allow us to give them that, you know, give them that off authorization to go up to 1 foot above the stream bank.
Yet aggregate mining allows them to be in the stream bank.
Yeah, this is plaster mining versus aggregate mining.
I know, but per your report, you related them together. They were given equal status. So how does aggregate mining get to the middle of the stream bank unless it goes through the 25 feet up to the stream bank to operate?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay. I guess the only other question I would have of staff at this time would be, is there been any consultation with the mining advisory board of Josephine County since this is related to mining activities?
I contacted Doc Annie regarding the proposal, and it was too small for them to trigger their permit for it.
And it would be outside the purview of the mining advisory committees to advise the board, not in a quasi-judicial capacity, just as a actually on county-owned property, and this is not county-owned property. So, but there are experts in that field on that group. They're just not chartered with land use issues.
In order to mine both sides of the creek and those five parcels, do they have to cross the creek in any place?
No, that wasn't part of the proposal.
Okay.
I think we're ready for the proponent's time. Thank you very much, Mr. Page.
Thank you.
That's really up to us. It's very important. Thank you so much. I imagine 30 people on that side of the room, or even the 10 over there running this. We may not do it perfect. That's probably going to happen, but we're going to do it just the same. So item number two is proponents. Yes, please. Up at the podium if you want to use the Elmo for anything.
Members of the board, my name is Jim Dole. I'm a lawyer here at Grants Pass. My office is at 1246 Northeast 7th Street. I represent Brimstone Natural Resource Company in this application. The questions that the board raises are obviously good ones, and it does underscore a little bit of the ambiguity here with respect to the way the code is written. First, I want to just address briefly the issue of the statement of appeal. It is correct that the former form simply doesn't make mention of the statement of appeal. When I reviewed it, I didn't see the statement of the code section. The statement of appeal did not appear to be mandatory for the purpose of filing the appeal application. You're required to fill out the form of the appeal, which was done on a timely basis. And that made sense to me when I looked at it, because obviously this is a de novo hearing. By comparison, it would be a different situation if we were appealing, for example, Planning Commission decision to the board, where we'd be on a confined record. Here, we're dealing with this application as if we're starting from scratch, which is exactly what's happening. So, in any event, I appreciate knowing for future reference the fact that the form has been clarified. My intention of the submittal on Friday was to simply make sure that something was in the record that provided a written description of our concerns. Obviously, the concern here is the nature of the conditions. And the statement that I provided on Friday lists those conditions that we have, that we take issue with. And specifically, those are 3, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17. Before I go into those in any detail, I do want to comment briefly on the way the code is written and how we're dealing with it. And in order to do that, I think it's important to understand a little bit of the history of this. As I indicated in the statement I provided on Friday, and it's certainly reflected in the application materials that are already part of the record, this situation actually began in 2013. When the Oregon Department of Forestry issued repair orders to Brimstone, we had a contested case hearing, and ultimately what resulted from that is an understanding that Brimstone needed to apply for what neither Brimstone nor the Department of Forestry understood was the right way to authorize mining within the riparian. over the coming months, it took quite a bit of time, we coordinated both with ODF and other agencies. The laundry list of those agencies is pretty much within this record, to come up with the those pieces that would fit into the puzzle of a sufficient plan for alternate practice. We finally got to the point where the only thing that was missing was this application. The county was the final approving agency in order to approve so that ODF could approve the plan for alternate practice. That's why we're here today. Through the course of a couple of attempts to submit report prepared quarter site plan application, we developed some additional understanding of what the agency's positions were, and that ultimately resulted in a November 1st application. I don't think there's any question on the part of staff that it's a complete application and is entitled to processing. We believe we've addressed all the pertinent criteria, and that's certainly indicated by the approval with conditions. Again, our concerns are only the conditions. The issue in contention, I think, really involves some disagreement between the applicant and ODFW in terms of who should be ultimately the agency that dictates the applicant's requirements for operating within the riparian area. And our position is that Oregon Department of Forestry is the lead agency because it's the one that's implementing the Forest Practices Act. While certainly that can be with input from ODFW, ODFW is not the permitting agency here. The permitting agency, from our position, is ODF first, Josephine County second. That's important for a number of reasons. Primarily, neither ODF's rules nor the county's land use code allow what ODFW would purport in this situation, which would be to create an outright ban of any placer mining activity within that 50-foot riparian corridor. And as I indicated in my written statement, the county code doesn't provide for that, and in fact, the county charter says you can't do that without providing just compensation. Here, our position is you don't need to worry about that at all because of ODF providing for that plan for alternate practice. The Forest Practices Act says if you're going to do something which is which at least appears to be inconsistent with maintaining the forest cover, you've got to have a plan to put it back. And that's very simply what's happening here. And that, again, is a fairly involved process that ultimately ODF is obligated to assure compliance. Our positioning, as indicated in our application material, is we not only meet ODF standards, we exceed it. And that's on a number of instances, not the least of which is the amount of reforestation that we're going to provide. We'll provide more dense and more fast-growing cover for the riparian area than even ODF would require. Again, this site is already impacted from prior logging that had nothing to do with brimstone. It was prior to my client acquiring its interest in this property. And so ultimately, through the course of this small-scale placer mining operation, the result after restoration is going to be a better product than existed before. The code here is really clumsy. It doesn't appear to work very well, but again, the way that we look at it is the authorization for the county to do what is obviously makes sense, particularly when you read the 25-foot setback yet allowing aggregate mining within the stream bank. That doesn't make any sense. So our position is you don't even need to go there in light of the fact that the code specifically allows, and that's 72.0402H, forest practices in the form of forest resource zone, but forest practices authorized by a permit issued under the Oregon Forest Practices Act. That's exactly what we're doing here. So that's how we achieve consistency with the county code to be able to operate this plat, to conduct this placer mining operation within the 50-foot setback. Briefly addressing the conditions, again, I commend the board to reviewing the statement that I provided. Our issues are, number one, whether it is an outright ban, as in condition 11, or condition 12 is would appear to forbid, and I'll use the terms of the condition, removal or damaging of woody vegetation within 50 feet of the stream. Those conditions are an outright ban. Those are not permitted either under the code or based upon the charter, providing for, in essence, restating an applicant's constitutional right under the Fifth Amendment and implementing that into the county charter. The board is required, and the board certainly has abundant authority to recognize that placer mining within the riparian area is permitted. The other primary issue that we have, again, is which agency will be the lead agency in terms of monitoring this. Our position is that ODFW is simply a consulting agency with the county, and ODF it does not have the legal authority to dictate to Josephine County how to interpret its own code section. And respectfully speaking, I just don't think ODFW's analysis is correct here on a number of instances, which I refer to in my May 12th letter. I know that Mr. West is here. He would like to address a couple of comments that he'd like to enter into the record. Again, our concern is with respect to those listed conditions. I'm happy to go into those in more detail. I know that I've summarized them pretty quickly. There are a couple of those which do go into a little bit more detail about the text of the conditions, but I guess in summary, the way I would describe it is any condition that you would purport to be an outright ban of placer mining within the riparian border is not legal.
I'll give you an additional 60 seconds.
And that's about all that I'll need. And the other condition that we object to is the condition 17, which appears to suggest that the property would be opened up without any limitation for random inspections or whatnot. And again, that kind of a condition is not authorized under the code and violates the county charter as well. So if you have any other questions, I'm happy to try to field those right now. Otherwise, I'll have to ask Mr. West to make a statement.
Yes.
I have the ODF letter in front of me from January 26, 2016. In which they acknowledge that there is a forest practice activity and they monitor conversion of the lands from forest land to non-forest land. But they are specifically kind of denying that they are the lead agency on this, that there's other agencies that are permitting agencies. And that, so that's basically the first kind of comment question is, you're stating that ODF is the first agency, but ODF themselves are kind of saying we're only dealing with the forest practice activities and nothing else.
Well, the whole point of this, again, is to achieve a complete approved plan for alternate practice, and that is a permit which ODF and only ODF issues. Now, ODF then will refer to other consulting agencies, but it is required to implement its reforestation rules, but again, the primary agency here is going to be ODF under the plan for alternate practice. In order to get the plan for alternate practice, requires Josephine County to approve the riparian order. I'm not suggesting that the county would not have any regulatory authority, and once the riparian plan is approved, then you'd kind of wash your hands of it. Not at all. The county could deal with enforcement, which I think ODF is Princeton to mine, and to have a final approved plan for restoring that when mining is completed. I hope that answers the question. I know it's a bit of a unusual issue, and it has been for everybody involved.
So just confirming, so this letter states the plan for alternative practice has not been approved, but in order for that to be approved, this process has to be completed.
And it says that Oregon Department of Forestry will monitor operations to see if the land use conversion takes place and outline the plan. However, Oregon Department of Forestry will not regulate non-forest related mining and would not be monitoring mining activities for compliance with any other agency regulations. So you're just saying that ODFW is the first box to be checked.
Exactly.
ODF.
Exactly. And I respect what Mr. Wetmore is saying. We have these conversations countless times over the last several years. ODF doesn't have any interest in regulating mining. ODF is concerned with regulating the reforestation of the riparian area.
Taking the forest out, put the forest back.
Exactly. And you know, Dogami, if it's required, the Corps, if it's required, DEQ, if it's required, those agencies might, you know, dip their toes into the mining pool a little bit if it were necessary. But because of how small scale this operation is, it's going to be pretty limited.
With the 25-foot setback riparian area, does that put Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife out of the picture? Does that satisfy there that you're not within 25 feet of the stream bench, and therefore you're not going to affect fish and wildlife or anything of that sort?
No, I guess the way I look at it is that, you know, ODFW is certainly a consulting agency to the county and ODF, but it doesn't have the legal authority to tell the county what it can and can't do with respect to its ordinance provisions. And the county's ordinance is clear that you can mine within 50, you can do placer mining within 50 feet of the stream bank in a situation like this, so long as we go through the reforestation and things like that. So, you know, we're not suggesting that ODFW is being written out of this, but and certainly its input is can be valuable, but our position is that ODFW does not have the legal authority to tell Josephine County that it must implement a ban on mining within the riparian zone. I hope that makes
sense. So when you go from 50 feet out 50 feet, beyond that, placer mining perfectly acceptable. It
correct.
Still has to pass the forestry plan, correct?
No.
Even out past 50 feet, just only within the 50 feet.
Correct. Because that would be we would not be, the miner would not be harvesting timber, unless the miner were harvesting timber, for commercial purposes, outside the 50-foot riparian corridor, and where the Forest Practices Act applies. So Mr. Wetmore can correct me if I'm wrong. The Forest Practices Act would apply within the 50-foot buffer area of the Class 2 stream.
So there's no requirement outside the 50 feet to reforest anything?
Well, Mr. Wetmore is going to have to address that, but ultimately Department of Forestry's obligation, as far as I understand it, would hinge outside the 50 feet on whether there was a commercial harvest outside the riparian. For example, if trees, there were hardwoods that were just laid down or open up an area for mining, and those hardwoods stayed there. I don't believe that OEM would be involved in that.
That's private, outside the 50 feet?
Outside
the property line is private.
But if the miner were conducting a commercial timber harvest outside the 50 feet, then certainly OEM would be regulating that just like any other commercial harvest. And I believe I'm accurate.
Does that include firewood, things of that sort? I mean, if he's outside the 6 foot, it's all firewood. So I've never seen it.
Mr. Wetmore and I and the department had a fairly extensive discussion about that a month or so ago. And I prefer to have him comment on those kinds of things, since that is his job, is to know when the Forest Practices Act would be triggered by a particular activity. But here, all we're talking about, since this is just a repairing corridor application, is just that from the stream.
25 feet is going to, from the stream bank is going to remain untouched. And then the additional 25 feet has to be restored. Out to the 50 feet, correct?
Our position is that we can mine up to the stream bank so long as we comply with the reforestation requirements that the Forest Practices Act would impose. And again, that Fish and Wildlife doesn't have the authority to tell the county, you can't let these people do that because we think it would create a hazard to them.
Can you say that one more time? So you're planning on mining all the way down to within 1 foot of high water?
Potentially.
In the riparian?
Potentially.
Area?
Correct. And our position is it's...
Then what, can I ask you a question? What good is there to have a 25-foot riparian area if we're going to go in and tear all up the mine and then put it back? Is that...
Well, that's exactly the point. You have to manage the way in which it's put back.
That's also not appropriate. I wouldn't want any one of you guys, when you're up there speaking, for somebody to boo a comment that you made or laugh at something that you said which was not receptive to the other side's opinion. And that's really important. That's the whole point of the demeanor that we have as a board here. And when somebody's testifying, I will not allow anybody to speak adversely in the audience against any one of you who testifies. And it's really important that we have that mutual respect. You don't have to agree with what Mr. Dole or Mr. West or anyone else says. I don't. But you will rarely see me react, and I believe this board would do the same thing. I can vehemently, you should come to a Wednesday meeting where I don't agree with most of what's said. But that doesn't mean I react. So I'd appreciate it if we just kind of adopt that demeanor here today, and I think we'll get through this really, really well. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Eric.
Please continue, Mr. Dole.
Probably lost track a little bit of where we were going with this, for sure.
Well, so if you're going to do the whole 50 feet right down to one, the only requirement is within that feet to restore it back and go outside of 50 feet, no?
No, it's more than just restoring. It's certainly you have to manage the erosion control and all those
sure,
things are addressed with it. So there is some management of the process with while mining is ongoing, but ultimately with a view towards restoring it.
Right, you have to watch out
open pits and
water,
turbidity
pits,
issues,
so
all that kind of stuff. Right.
So the whole point of a riparian designation is for sensitive management. It's different than you're managing on other parts, and that's under the Oregon Department of Forestry's purview under the Oregon State Forest Practices Act under the BLM Resource Management Plan. It's a special corridor looking at special use, but that doesn't mean that there isn't any management there. There's restoration management that's done, and those have to go through similar permits. They have to do similar things. This permit is requesting placer mining in that area, and so there's a higher sensitivity to it, a greater degree of detail with preparing plans of action in that, and I think that's what we're talking about, has that special designation. It's not that you can't do anything else outside or that it's dramatically different, because you're going to have a reforestation plan anywhere you cut trees under ODF, a certain threshold of probably cubic feet per acre, what have you. So it's just,
well,
there's a special area.
I'm going to assume, because I live right on Gilbert Creek, and you can't touch anything in Gilbert Creek until you get the necessary permitting and so on and so forth. And I mean, my neighbor did stuff down there, and of course, they had core engineers and a whole host of people in there that were concerned. He could do what he wanted within reason with approval. And then the end result, it took him probably 2 years to restore that to a reasonable, you know, what I call riparian. And I was surprised because when I first built there, I couldn't touch anything in the riparian area, is what I was told. But that's not the case. You can do in the riparian area what's allowed in the riparian area as long as you return it to its original state to the satisfaction of... And I'm going to guess 6 to 8 government agencies that are involved in this process. So it just floored me how many permits.
Right.
And, you know, know, everything else and everybody that's going to be keeping their eye on this 4.6 acre.
Right, and I think that's a good point. It's not a very big operation, and it's going to be, obviously we have to stay within the 5,000 cubic yard annual dam limitation, or otherwise we have to get a surface mining permit. You can do the math, where the maximum production would be about 300 yards a day, so you have a very, very limited amount of mining annually. We've got a limitation of mining seasonally, and then the whole project is only a maximum of 4.6 acres. So, again, the fundamental disagreement here, I think, is whether there is any legal authority to ban mining within, to any degree within that 50-foot limitation. Our position is that the county is deferring to the Department of Fish and Wildlife, which resulted in the two conditions that talk about a 25-foot limit and a 50-foot limit, which, as a practical purpose, constitutes an outright ban of all mining. We can't do it and meet what OBFW says should be required. You can't remove woody vegetation. If the county were to uphold that, it would be the equivalent of an outright ban.
Yeah, Gilbert Creek, if something falls in the creek, you have to let the fish worry about getting around.
And there may be a difference between Gilbert Creek and the Sunbelt in terms of those regulations, because of the nature of the fish that are involved.
Right, now, each one of these parcels is going to be done one a year. Is there any inspection process along the way to make sure that you get done with parcel one and there's a certain amount of requirements at the end of, I guess, decommissioning that parcel?
Well, so that would be left to, again, to both the county and ODF to consider whether repairing management plan is being carried out consistent with the permit, and ODF looking at it from the standpoint of whether the plan for alternate practice is being, those requirements are being met. So you get two bites at the apple there in terms of the ongoing management.
So at the end of parcel number one, Oregon Department of Forestry and Josephine County will go out there and inspect to see what was done, make sure there's no holes or potholes or...
They're having to do that.
Sediment the creek. And
as a practical matter, how they would do that, I'm certainly the planning director, Mr. Wetmore, can talk about that. Mr. West can talk about that in terms of how we would envision that process going. But yeah, I think that's a fair way of looking at it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. West. Hello? Yes.
I'm sorry.
Under the package, Section L, which is the repairing corridor site plan review letter dated March 1st, 2017, page 4. There's a section that says there's currently a state forester order prohibiting Brimstone Natural Resource Company to be party to a notification, meaning the company is not allowed to be listed as the operator, landowner, timber owner. The reason for a statewide order is and has failed complete reforestation repairs is required and dealing with prior damage. So I guess for me, my question is, part of your application states that there will be no, per ODFW's requirements for no kind of holding place or, oh, what was the wording, pits and stuff like that, that the over, thank you. I did read it, I'm just not remembering the right words. The overburden, when you removed, separated from the gold, put right back, so there will be no pits, there will be no fish storage and all that other kind of stuff. And any reforestation will be done by February the next year. My question is, if this is the promise, why hasn't the past damage been repaired? And so I guess with that is my question is, I'm concerned about, I hear in the application the damage was there before y'all bought the property. Yet at the same time, violation was issued in 2013 and in 2015 for this violation, and that required reforestation. That hasn't been done. So as far as showing good faith that damage would be repaired in a timely manner when we're dealing with 4 years of damage not being repaired.
Yeah, I appreciate what you're saying. So,
Mr. Dole, would you mind pulling the mic down a little bit?
hitting my...
Yeah, I apologize.
Anyway, it's a good question. So, again, I think Mr. Wetmore can comment on this if I make any misstatement of the history. But when Brimstone did not understand that, and I believe neither did ODF representatives understand that the right way to do what Brimstone wanted to under these circumstances was to do the plan for alternate practice. And through the course of the administrative hearing process, thought about it more, and by the end of that process, both sides were in agreement that this is essentially the safety valve for the Forest Practices Act to allow this kind of activity. By then, the damage which you described had already been done, that those trees had been harvested. It has never been ODF's position, I don't believe it would take that position today, that Brimstone needs to go replant all these trees so it can get planned for alternate practice so it can go tear them out again. That just...
But the letter says that.
Actually, I don't think it does.
Well,
I don't think it's quite that.
But 4A, as I'm interpreting it, and granted I haven't been to law school, failed to complete the reforestation repairs as required within the 4.4 acres of riparian management area harvested in violation of the Oregon Forest Protector Planning Practices Act. So it's requiring reforestation to be done and the payments paid and the alternative plan to be filed before it will issue a right to continue working.
And that may be an issue that Brimstone and ODF has to deal with in terms of the cart before the horse, which comes first situation. Again, our position would be with ODF, we're going to go plant trees just to tear them out again. Well, does that make sense?
Regardless of that conversation, it's a condition number 4. So prior to issuing a permit from the county, we're going to have to receive a letter of compliance from ODF that all previous violations of the Act, the Forest Practices Act, are going to be satisfied to some degree, either through this permitting process. So I hear what you're saying, and I think that letter is probably accurate, and what you're saying could also be accurate. It's condition number 4, and that letter satisfying us to the degree that ODF is satisfied that however this process moves forward, you will satisfy what they want. That's a condition in here, item number 4, and that's how we...
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, how exactly that works its way out with ODF is primarily going to be between Brimstone and ODF. Obviously, there's a history in terms of trying to deal with this and manage our situation through what I think was clearly a misunderstanding on Brimstone's part and probably to some degree a misunderstanding on the part of ODF representatives at the outset of this back in 2013. We're trying to just get this fixed once and for all.
Mr. Dio.
Really, it's going to require some more work with ODF on that.
Going on to number C, letter C, excuse me, Brimstone Natural Resources failed to obtain an approved plan for alternate practice because they never got an ODFW, which is Fish and Wildlife, sign off on the required riparian landscape plan. So basically, you're not going to get a riparian management area, that part approved until you get ODF and W involved, correct?
Well,
how far upstream do we need to go?
That's the problem. Is our position is that ODFW is in effect telling the county, here's how you must interpret it and apply your ordinance. Our position is no, you don't have to do that. You need to apply the ordinance in a way that your code allows, and certainly subject to the limitation that the county charter imposes. Again, if ODFW's position is ODFW will never permit mining within the 50-foot riparian corridor, then that triggers Section 29.1 of the county charter. Basically, it's been in effect a total physical occupation of the riparian zone by that ban.
I don't want to debate this issue, but I think what we're looking at is ODF can make that determination to take what ODF&W says and say, well, they're telling us that we can't do that. What Mr. Dole's saying is that we don't have to use that as criteria to say no from our standpoint. Saying yes here may get a no from ODF, and it'll be Mr. West or Mr. Dole's issue to go after ODF based on Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife saying, no, we don't want you to do that, but it wouldn't be our restriction.
Right.
So that's
and procedurally,
it's a matter of who makes that advice and takes that from ODF and W and exercises that.
So that's
us or them.
The last thing of clarification that I saw from the application was whether it's wet or not, essentially. That word wet comes into play many times. And so the question of seasonal, the question of runoff, the question of all the things that are related to when does water come into the play. And, I mean, the final level of that was the Department of Water Resources and how do you plan on watering the plants you replant, essentially, the trees.
Something that was interesting.
I've never heard of having a water plan for forests. I know that
it's sometimes necessary, required based on a survivability, and that is required under Oregon Forest Practices Act. But that condition, item number, by the county planning department, not to sidetrack what you're saying, but it's the 90%. It's item number 16. The survival drops below 90%. Plants that do not survive must be replaced by the following February 28th, ODF and W. That's a really interesting restriction if that's what you're talking about, survivability. And sometimes they would be required to water if that's what it requires to get survivability. I don't like the wording of that because for Josephine County Forest Department, we'll overseed from a standpoint that will meet that stocking capacity if 20% of those trees fail. It isn't the number of trees planted, it's the number of stocking required and a density element and the completed survivability. So you could plant 10 times what you're required to have, understanding that you're going to have a mortality of 50% and you meet that stocking threshold. And so that language is not accurate with how. Not the number of plants planted, it's the number that you're required to have it's complete. But
I mean, that's one side. I understand survivability and replanting and all that other kind of stuff, but I don't understand necessarily the plan for watering on the plants because not always is that required. But regardless, there was a question from one of the other agencies as far as whether or not you would be required to use water to separate the gold from the dirt. And then putting the dirt back and all that kind of stuff with the runoff. So I guess for me, I'm asking for a little bit more education on when is water on involved.
I'll let Mr. West talk about the money plan in that respect. But in effect, it's a closed system. There's not going to be the extraction of water and then reintroducing the water back into the Brimstone Gulch. That's not how this plan would work. So I'll let him describe that.
I think I now direct my question. It has to do with equipment. Your equipment that you're going to have on there's always here.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Dolan, it's my turn.
Oh, okay.
So, item number 17.
He's a gracious host who lets us go first.
It's the chair's responsibility to facilitate and let them do what they need to do first. I'm concerned. So you had stated something about item number 17 being a sticking point on condition number 17. We're going to have to grant and allow access by regulatory agencies. I think in other situations where I'm looking at, say, the Mahana site operated by Copeland, there is inspections. There could be a duration of time. I would imagine it would probably require a safety element, perhaps, that there's notice. But there's going to have to be some sort of, I'd like the wording proposed by you that satisfies the elements of item number 17.
Yeah, the county just imposes some limitation on those kinds of things. We
yep.
don't have any problem with that.
Great.
It's whether the conditions is written right now contemplates that.
Great. I think it would be by appointment because I would imagine most facilities are going to have a no trespassing, no.
Right.
No, and agencies have to abide by that unless given an appointment and approval and permission to do so, and that's going to be required. Item number 12, which is your sticking point, removal of damaged or woody vegetation within the 50-foot riparian setback corridor. So I'm not clear, and I would really like a geographic delineation of what we're talking about, because there's a lot of different terms that people use. They'll use the high water mark, they'll use all of these different things, and in this situation, your image shows a 200-foot planned corridor, 1,000 feet long. How much of that is negatively impacted by a 50-foot riparian? Is it an entire 50 feet, or were you not planning on doing 25 of that anyway? So really it's only 25 of a reduced impact, which means if you have 25, you're still mining 175 of that. You're allowed to do that. And I do believe that the county or the state, we have authority to regulate the margin there and not have it considered a taking. You maybe be negatively impacted, but not a full-on, you would reference, and reference in the charter would be helpful if you could refresh my memory about that.
So the difficulty is when there is, when it's proposed to be an outright ban, then the difficulty for a placer mining operation is you don't have the ability to even investigate whether an area is potentially gold bearing.
Well, I'm pretty sure you're probably not allowed under 838, you referenced that in here, to do that even in the water. So, I mean, there is going to be points at which we do restrict all out placer mining and investigation other than with a gold pan and non-mechanized is what I'm reading Senate Bill 3 to propose in 838's restrictions. So,
well, certainly those would potentially preempt. Those statutes would preempt, but my understanding has always been that 838 doesn't apply to this because it's outside the stream.
That's fine. I just know that that's an example of where
you can
do that. So, and then what is the definition of brimstone gulch? Because condition number 11, no mining or other disturbances within 25 feet of brimstone gulch. I don't really feel like that's a very, and I'm not being critical of you, that's a condition we put in. You know, that's like saying the Illinois Valley or,
well,
I mean, it's a very broad.
Brimstone gulch is the formal name of the stream.
Sure. So do we have that delineated to where we can know on this map that you propose exactly how that's going to negatively impact your operational, your plan?
My understanding is that 25 feet would be from the high water mark in Brimstone Gulch. If I'm incorrect.
Which year? The average? 100 year? 500 year? It seems really vague, and these gulches can swell to sometimes in this last year.
I don't know the answer to that. Perhaps Mr. Wetmore or staff.
Okay. I think we satisfied number 4. Your concerns are actually of these conditions, item number 11, 12, and 17. You may have read more, but I didn't catch those when you were going through, and that's the whole point of this appeal. So did you have other conditions that weren't?
I would also reiterate, I would love those numbers again because I was trying to scratch that.
Now I get to the page.
Sure.
I did catch 11, 12, and 17.
In my May 12th letter.
Which we don't have, by the way.
Then I would ask that it be entered into the record.
Okay.
Obviously, it's been our expectation that this would not be the end of the hearing process, so, you know.
I don't think it's going to be. We'll get copies of that made for the board.
Appears to me to be redundant of 12. The 14, our concern was its departure from our seasonal restriction. We had proposed confining mining within 25 feet of Brimstone Gulch to August and September, and then to cease and reclaim by October 15th. Condition 14 is work within the 50-foot riparian corridors to be limited from June 15th to October 15th. one of the problems there is under that kind of restriction, it's going to take a lot longer for this plan to be completed and for everything to be done and out.
Is that the first part of what you said? Because I felt like you said July and August finished by
October,
which June to October affords you more time.
The application proposed confining mining activities within 25 feet of Brimstone to August and September. Condition 14 says all work within the 50-foot corridor is limited to June 15th through October 15th.
Yeah.
Our intention is, weather permitting, when it's drier, whenever weather permits it, and that can even be a dry spell in the winter months, to be able to do some mining in order to get this completed. So our concern with respect to 14 was that it would be too big of a restriction and would potentially limit our ability to get the plan completed. As you know, ODF has some time limitations, and we have to manage that as well. So that's our concern there. Let's see.
Well, just to clarify, these are the limitations that ODFW provided.
Correct. And our concern is that's not what we proposed, and nor do we think that kind of a restriction. Our position is that ODFW should not dictate to you how particularly those kinds of detailed conditions should be written. So 15, our objection to 15 is the same as 14. 16, again, is that issue of who is going to be the lead from the standpoint of managing completion of the plan in terms of the reforestation type activities, and then 17 we've already discussed. So.
Wasn't 3 and 10 on there as well?
I thought your application said you were going to complete things by October 15th. So item number 15 is, I thought that was consistent with your application. I just want to really address
that. I'll go back and look at that if I could.
Okay, I think that one's okay.
Oh, yeah, 3. I'm not sure where this comes from. It's a reference to a culvert. There's no culvert on this property. I think there's a misunderstanding on part of staff or the agency about there's a culvert on another parcel that ODF and Brimstone have been dealing with, but that's not part of this issue.
Okay. We'll have to ask staff about that. Mr. Young.
Because Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife have a whole bunch of these, have their name tagged all over it, am I assuming that this is a steelhead stream or a fish-bearing stream up this high?
It's not steelhead. My understanding
what's
is
in it?
Trout.
Trout.
About brown trout.
And they go up?
It's not a migratory species.
What's that?
It's not a migratory species.
Good question for ODFW. Mr. Dole, I think we're close. Thank you so much. Mr. West, you'll be given 5 minutes under applicant's expert witness, I would imagine.
Members of the board, John West. I'm a representative of Brimstone. I have a little disagreement with your county code. This is not aggregate mining. This is placer gold mining. There's two different. If you read the definition of aggregate mining, it's the same thing as when we applied for our crusher permit just downstream. That's aggregate mining. We're not crushing the aggregate. We're not any aggregate rock that's dug up is put right back. It's not being taken away, it's not taken out, it's put right back into the hole. All we're doing is placer gold mining. The same thing as over 2,000 placer gold miners do here in Josephine County. And I guess I would ask the board, is in this riparian plan, is it the board's take that you're going to start start with the other 1,999 placer miners in Josephine County, and you're going to regulate placer mining now because that's what this is. Whether I take a dredge, a high banker, or how I do it, it's still placer gold mining. So I don't think this code falls under placer gold mining. And so I get we're all working in the riparian area. All placer gold miners are. But Josephine County does not regulate placer gold mining. And so I think that the board might want to look at that. And as far as the 25-foot setback, every placer miner that I know, whether they start into the creek, they go into the bank. So they get in that 25-foot, as you would say, setback. All high bankers are sitting on that in that area. Dredgers dredge into that bank area. So I'm not in the stream itself. I have the right to be in the stream. There's the 1872 mining laws that are still in effect today. This is federal patented property. It's set out. If there's a federal patented mine here, and the law states that I have the right to mine this. So if Josephine County chooses to take that right away from me, someone has to pay me for the loss of that. Point blank. I'm not here to threaten. I'm not threatening nobody. I'm just saying, you're going to have 1,999 other miners that if you're going to take this stance, I think Josephine County better pony up a lot of money because you're going to have lawsuits pouring at you that you're not going to be able to control because the miners have this right. There's Dohami is a mining agency. There's agencies that control this. Now, is Josephine County going to come in under this riparian landscape? It was my understanding, talking to other commissioners, that this was put in for the developing inside of a riparian area, building a home, a garage, a shop, a deck, whatever. The word landscape here is, we have reclamation work we have to do as miners. If we take this out, we take the woody material out, the trees, the shrubs, we have to put it back. Dohami has laid it out very clear under reclamation. I may not need a permit to mine because it's small scale under Dohami, but I still have to put the reclamation part of it back. Regardless if this was an issue with Oregon Department of Forestry or not, I still am required under Dohami's rules and regulations to reclaim the ground. I can't leave it a moonscape like the other property on Dog Creek that where you see big boulder piles and nothing's been done. That's not the way it works anymore. This is 2017. We have to put it back the way we found it. That or better. So I for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to come in and tell Josephine County, you restrict me, but if he sues you, we're not going to be there to help you. That's what's going to happen. Josephine County is going to bear the brunt of this. Not Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. They have nothing to lose. They're not a regulatory agency. They don't have no authority. I'm not in the stream. I'm outside of the stream. They want to regulate what I'm doing outside of the stream. If I cause dirty water, DEQ will be on me. If I do anything that causes those issues, there's an agency that will be on me. That's why we laid out a plan during the dry season, and we will not leave pond. We will not leave this. We will put it back. At the end of each year, we will restore it. We'll plant our trees. We'll do what's right and put it back to good or better than what it was.
Any questions, Mr. West? Commissioner Young?
Are you going to do that year by year? In other words, at the end of the year, you're done with 1 acre, say 1 acre. Are you going to completely restore that before you move on to the next one?
Yes, sir.
So there won't be any damage. My concern is you disrupt all that soil, take away all the trees, you're going to replant them. I got that. Another thing your report said is that you haul the gold-bearing dirt or whatever, wherever you find this layer or whatever it is, you're going to take that offside a half a mile, process that. I'm assuming that's when you wash it with water?
Correct.
It's not on site, so you're not causing any erosion on site. then you're going to bring that dirt, you bring that dirt back.
Correct.
And put it back in. You're just, the only thing that leaves a property is the gold that stays off property.
Correct.
Correct? Okay.
We take the top, we remove the vegetation, which most of it's gone. We remove the topsoil and put it over here.
Overburden.
Yeah. You're right.
Is that overburden?
All of it's overburdened until you get to the gold, but we take it in layers. Okay. The topsoil is a portion of the overburden. We set it off over here.
So it goes back as topsoil.
Right. Then we set the gravel layer that is non-gold bearing over here. And so then all we're doing is bedrock to roughly 2 to 4 feet of gold bearing.
I think this said 3 to 7 feet.
Yeah, well, normally it's 2 to 4, but you can have a hole, so it can be a little more. That material gets washed through a sluice box, just as if you were dredging. Then it comes back. We put that material back. The only thing it doesn't have is the gold. It goes down. The gravels go next. The topsoil goes next. And then it gets leveled. The trees get planted in. And then we have a 4 to 6 year period to make sure that the vegetation continues to grow. So anything that dies, we replant it. And we went above and beyond what Oregon Department of Forestry or what most outfits require. We went in and added other fast-growing species to shade the stream and to do other things. We thought we was being prudent and doing the right thing. And instead, it seems like we're just kind of getting slapped around more.
So do you go back to your process? Do you come in at the end of the day and put this, what you've extracted the gold out, the gold-bearing layer down, and the rock, and the topsoil, at the end of the day for the area you've worked on that day?
Yes.
Or do you wait to the end of the week, the end of the month, or the end of the project?
No, as if this is a square, and we start over here, As we come across in this square, the material gets filled behind us, and so this isn't left as a hole. It keeps filling up. So by the time we get to here, at the end of what we hope is our season, we make it that far, then this has all been filled back in. Each layer is put back. So if we see in our plan, if we see we're coming into winter and we only get to this point, we didn't make it, all this is filled up here. This will be staked off. This part will be reclaimed, replanted, and we'll have to wait till the next dry season before we can finish this area. That's why there will be none of it left at disturbed. It will all be that at the end of what we mine.
And we're, so I guess if it pours down rain one day during the summer, I can get the gully washers that we usually do. What, does it all wash into the creek?
No.
What you've disturbed?
No, because we're filling in behind this. So we watched that. We that was part of our plan talking, that we watch the weather. If we see big thunderstorms coming, we fill in behind us and we don't leave anything open. And we wait for the storm to end. We wait for it to dry out, make sure that the runoff's gone, and then we start back.
How big do you dump from?
10 yards.
So I would want nothing more than for this to be outside the purview of Josephine County and let another agency who's actually should be in charge of this to run this. My question to you is, why are you here? If ODF is saying from the county that they require our sign-off in some capacity before they'll issue you a riparian corridor site plan, isn't your issue more with ODF than us?
This thing will eventually end up in Bethelcourt. Okay, that's where it's heading. We've tried to mitigate some things. I don't agree that we should be here. I'm trying to play ball, but we're not getting anywhere because of this riparian thing. I believe that Josephine County now has made our planning. They're in charge of mining, and I don't even think planning was ever supposed to be in charge of mining, placer mining, gold mining.
I do find this as somewhat of a stretch that we're issuing this under a development permit, and it's regulated under aggregate operation when that isn't. There should be a very clear line, and I think it's inappropriate that people put aggregate and placer in the same
bucket,
so to speak. because they're not. And I would see that placer should be outside of the purview of Josephine County. And we should not try to find ourselves regulating things that are not in the development element. That's where the county, we set urban growth boundaries and such to kind of regulate planning elements of where development happens and relative to the infrastructure that we have to support from transportation and other things. Placer just seems like a little bit of a stretch for me. Commissioner Bion?
In the material I read over the weekend, it said that prior to you happening on the scene, that the Historical Society had an interest in this particular property.
That was one of the appeal letters.
Right. What
Brimstone actually purchased the property from the Historical Society.
What was their interest in? What was their interest in that property?
They were actually given the property. So they put the property up for sale, and we purchased it from them. They actually have no interest in what we're doing, the Historical Society.
Well, I didn't know whether they had it from a historical, because that
no,
they, area out there is rich in mining history. And
that's,
and I
what,
that's why they had it, that this thing has...
No, it was donated to them.
Right.
And so this become... they had Brown, the... consultor Brown that was on 7th Street up there. I can't think of his first name.
Larry?
Larry Brown. He actually logged it for the Historical Society back in...
Said 30 years ago.
I'm going to say 80s or something like that.
Was it properly or improperly? Probably not by today's standard. Probably wasn't reforested to today's standards after it was logged 30 years ago.
They did a fabulous job. There was actually more trees than the reforestation would require. In fact, that's why when we went in there, we feel like what we're under is mining laws. We removed the vegetation, which is considered overburden in mining. So we removed that. Our intentions was to mine there. And then it started our problem with Oregon Department of Forestry, and that will get resolved in the federal court system. But for now, we're trying to move forward and try to make everybody happy. Well, we got stuck here with the riparian landscape plan that I don't believe the commissioners, from my understanding, talking to them, ever had any plans of the riparian landscape plan happen to do with placer gold mining. Because as I say, 2,000 of you guys are...
I think you've made your point.
Yeah.
I think we need to move along if there are no further questions.
I just one question.
Okay.
Timber that's on there, is it marketable?
There's still marketable timber on the property, not in the mining area.
Not in the mining area, that's what I want to
know. The culvert, you're saying it's, your attorney said it's not on your property, but it is Brimstone's property, there's a culvert on it.
No, it's downstream on Westland Contracting property.
Okay, so it's not related to this in any way?
It has nothing to do with this tax law.
And I, just to point out, the very first application, Mr. West is very clear that he thinks Josephine County has no place in this and shouldn't be.
I know. We're going to ask staff about the culvert element on a separate tax lot and perhaps different ownership or what have you. That's a condition. I don't know that you can put.
I don't think I have any questions for Mr. West.
Great. Any others in favor at this point? You'll be given 5 minutes. Please state your name and address for the record. Any others in favor? Questions of staff directed to the chairperson. That would be from the board. I have one. I think Councilor Hicks is in the audience. I'd like the answer of jurisdiction, whether or not we have whether it's necessary for us to review this request basically by ODF before they'll issue their riparian corridor site plan.
Okay, well, I hate to see the council. And would I, may I ask you to just restate that question?
Why do we have jurisdiction over this? Is it necessary under our development permit, the code identifying aggregate as necessary for a development permit, but it does not spell out that... that placer mining is under that jurisdiction for a development permit, and honestly, what should we do in this situation? I think there's also been heavy amount of talk about litigation, either against the county, others, and how do we treat that in this quasi-judicial situation and not putting the county at further liability? And those could be a conversation where we may need to be in recess, advertise for an executive session, and have that review.
That's my suggestion at this point.
On all of it?
Well, I do need to, yes, I do need to research. I mean, these are pretty valid questions. You need the actual answer.
I think so.
So
I'd hate to waste any more time of anybody's, especially your guys' and ours, for having a review of something we're ultimately not going to review, or how this whole process, I apologize, but it's kind of a sticky situation.
Yeah. Stuff has come to light in the course of the hearing. It's taken a very interesting turn. And so if you need the particular answers to these questions, I'm going to have to look that up and give you the answer, which I can't do right now off the top of my head.
So how does that work in a quasi-judicial setting to have an executive session in the middle of that?
That's up to him.
No,
okay.
It doesn't happen right now. It has to be noticed.
Okay.
So we'd have to be hold this in recess and we'll, and move forward at a time in the future. But
can I explain why we feel we don't have the authority to review it?
Sure. I think that's appropriate. No guarantees that it's going to satisfy either legal counsel or the court, but it's worth a good college try.
Sure. My name is Julie Schmalzer, Director of Community Development for Josephine County. So one of the questions was, why is the county reviewing a plaster mining application? And we view plaster mining as a land use activity, and it is not listed in our code, but we do have a section in our code. It's section 60.060 that says if it's not listed in the code, you have to find something similar to it, and then you process it under that section. The code also says, and I'm going to go to section, it was ordinance 2006-001, section B, which talks about, it lists the stuff that can happen in a riparian corridor, and it lists the aggregate mining. It doesn't say anything about placer mining. So again, you apply what's the closest use we have in that code, and in our mind it was aggregate mining. But it also has a following paragraph that says you can consider other things in there. In this case, it could be the placer mining.
In where?
You can consider other things to occur in that riparian corridor, and you would treat them through the site plan review process. And the other review processes we have, which will say, and let me just flip to it real quick here. What it does is it talks about how you review these things. If you don't, for example, if you're in a riparian corridor or some other area and you don't have that staff expertise, because we don't have biologists and things like that on staff. So what it does is the code specifically says that the director has the ability to have these reviewed according to other applicable master plans, rules, resolutions, ordinances, codes, technical manuals, and policies of the county or the state or the federal government. So the code says, just real quickly to summarize, that if it doesn't say placer mining, find something similar. But then there's this other section that says, even if you can't find something similar, you can still review it, but you have to review it according to certain standards, which then say you can consult to state or federal agencies to help you. So that's how we got that. The other thing is, when we talk about why we apply certain standards in this area, we look at the purpose of the code all the time. So we look at a riparian area boundary, and I'm just going to read to you real quick. It defines it as a line located a certain distance back from the ordinary high water line for riparian areas in which certain uses or activities are prohibited and or regulated, which we're doing here, or enhance beneficial riparian attributes. So as part of the land use review process, we're looking to protect whatever's in that riparian area boundary. because we don't have the specialist on site, we defer to those sections of the code that say you rely on other state or federal manuals and policies. And that's why we feel we have the authority to regulate this and why we consult with ODFW and ODF, as well as other agencies. Just a note about Ogami. Mr. West indicated that he was, that Ogami was taking care of it, so why are we even involved? Our information from Ogami, and we have it in writing, is this isn't big enough, we're not touching it. So when you have Ogami not involved, and we don't have the expertise on staff, we refer to that section that says, go talk to your state and federal officials that can help you. And that's why we're here, and that's why they're involved in our case.
Mr. Dion.
Okay, as you said, that we can step in. Doesn't say that we will or shall. And this one right here seems to be falling below everybody's radar above us. Nagami and the geological people, they're all saying, hey, it's not even in our wheelhouse. That falls back to other agencies. And there's so many agencies involved in this thing from the state level. And that's the one Mr. West has to take care of. There isn't any county requirement other than theirs, is it? That we're, it doesn't, does it violate any of our codes?
Well, let me just.
Or is it this can versus may versus can versus will?
It's shall, okay? So it says here the repairing quarter setback area shall be 50 feet wide and goes on to be.
Sure, I get that. But it doesn't say that we shall, because it says aggregate mining and it does not specifically state placer mining. It says you can look for like operations or activities. It doesn't say that you shall go and try to put that together with other activities.
It does. Let me just confirm here real quick.
Could there be a possibility that we can have a copy of those codes that you're. I'd love that for going forward.
Just a matter of clarification, would it be better for this to be something that Mr. Hicks and Ms. Schmelzer get?
Honestly, I think it's inevitable that we have that conversation, so I don't really want to spend too much time reviewing something that's going to be reviewed again. There's some questions that I have that I'm not going to be able to or permitted to ask here today.
I've got to make a motion that we actually recess until which time Councillor Hicks can bring back to us in executive session the information that we've asked to be determined today before we continue with this process.
I'll second that.
That's been moved and seconded. Further discussion on this?
I did not mean to cut you off, though.
No, I think it's really important that we have that discussion, and I apologize. So historically, I have requested when I was chair that these all land use issues have a prior meeting with the director and our counselor to review them. And so I think we're going to need to institute that, not just for this one, but for all, just from the standpoint of procedurally, how are we going through this? And so that when I'm facilitating this, I can anticipate. I may have spared, you won't have to give that over. We will reconvene if necessary, and we'll start back up with the opponents. Item number 3, so if you have a representative, that person will be given 10 minutes and then we'll go through all of the witnesses if we reconvene. Otherwise, the county may issue a statement of either non-jurisdiction or what have you, some clarifying points on that to everyone. But I think it's really important that we are afforded as the quasi-judicial. We're fairly layman, as most commissioners in the state are, and we're put in this position and we really want to do the right thing by everybody here. If it is us, then we will proceed. If it is not us, then we need somebody else to step in as the agency of jurisdiction. So Councillor Hicks can be the only one really that the county's required to take that kind of advice and due diligence, and I think that serves everybody in the best fashion. Ideally, I'd like to set, as we historically do, the next time and location. However, the outcomes are pretty broad here, and so I really can't set that. When we recess, you usually recess to reconvene at another point. We'll have to re-advertise the way we advertise for this one, given that we don't have an anticipated date, time, location, unless there's a recommended. Do you guys have one off already scheduled? You should always come to a hearing, and I know you probably know this, with the idea that it's going to be continued to a date and time certain, as we're required to do by law, and have a date and time certain that the board is going to be able to meet and convene that we could announce here today. I'm prepared to do that and cancel it if we have to. That'd certainly be the easiest thing to do.
My understanding is that if you do a continuance, you do not have to go through the full-blown publication notice that
okay.
we did originally.
I think that's the case if you determine a date and time certain. That's my understanding. I could be wrong, but we've always done it to where we had a date and time certain to reconvene, and that's the reason why you didn't have to go through all that other stuff. You understood it'll be 2 weeks from now, right here in the Ann Basker at 9 a.m. It seems very standard that we announce those things. So.
Right. The last time we did this, we chose just we went a week out, was what we had done. So.
We have a land use hearing, I believe, next week.
Correct.
So it won't be then. Well,
point of order.
Mr. Rouse, you always make pretty good points. I wouldn't allow most people, but you're gonna get an exception here.
Steve Rouse, where we are at this. It is an unusual situation, but we're not deciding here whether we should have an application or not. This is an appeal hearing of a director's decision that's already been, the application's already been processed, the decision's been made. The applicant has appealed it, so we're not in a decision. Should we even be hearing this? We've already heard it.
You may not be, but as I understand the rules of a de novo hearing and the four opportunities for outcome, I want to explore what those avenues are and whether or not I can arrive at those conclusions right now. And that's definitely, I believe, in the purview of the board to do that. So I am going to still endorse the idea as the motion on the floor. And this is part of the discussion to recess, convene with our legal counsel.
What's interesting is that you've heard the applicant's positions. You haven't heard any of the opponent's positions. So all your discussions are based on what you've heard, not
yes.
on any other criteria that might be brought forward.
We're not evaluating the merits of this case, Mr. Rouse. We're evaluating the jurisdiction.
And I have jurisdictional points that I think the board should consider. One option I was just going to throw out, I mean, this is unusual, is to allow the opposition to go ahead and present their case, then take a recess, reconvene, in other words, continue the hearing,
mm-hmm.
have your consultation, then you'll have a little broader perspective on the issues. I think that would be more fair. That's up to the board.
It's really important that we not speak without being recognized, and I know it's hard. But I've provided a couple of different opportunities for guidance on this one. This is a quasi-judicial hearing, and our rules are different than a normal weekly business session. So I don't know what the ramifications are, but it's really important, and I'll reiterate the next time when we convene, that we keep those to a minimum. Any other discussion on this issue? Councilor Hicks, do you have a recommendation?
That's what I was going to ask.
You get the fun stuff. It may look like we have all the fun up here, but that's not the case.
Take it easy.
Well, yeah, it's legal counsel. I do recommend setting out a date certain, even at this stage in the hearing, set out a date certain. So 2 weeks, I consulted with Mr. Dole. He says 2 weeks from now is adequate.
Okay. Mr. Rouse made his point, and I think you'd also want to afford them the opportunity. Are you going to be their designee? One of them, I just need one, that you consult in 2 weeks' notice is the appropriate time. What was your opinion on whether or not we proceed with the hearing today and take the opponents and the testimony? It might serve this process.
It might. And typically, there is an opportunity to object to the jurisdiction of the board, and so if he's going to get up and object to the jurisdiction, then that could be part of the record.
I don't think he's objecting to it. I think that probably would have been something Mr. Dole would have done at the beginning. At the onset, we would have addressed this issue before testimony would have been presented.
Mm-hmm.
The board can exercise that option of jurisdictional at any time.
Well, it's interesting because the original application said the county does not have jurisdiction. Yet this morning when you asked at the start, does anyone challenge the jurisdiction of the board, nobody said yes. So it is a quandary. It is a unique thing. I still want your feedback, but if it would serve the board to continue, I can withdraw my motion. At the same time,
the motion would fail.
Okay, we can take a vote, but I still think that there's more that we have to discuss and have you look at before we come back.
Well, I really want to serve whatever process is best, and so I would imagine that if Mr. Rouse is asked on behalf of the opponents to speak today, that we entertain that and we'll move forward. And it doesn't change anything that we're going to talk about in executive session. But if he wants his opportunity to address this issue, he is not going to be allowed to do that in executive session. This would afford him the opportunity to do so. So
I think Lulu would be more satisfied than
I think so too. I'd rather hear it than not. So thank you so much. All those in favor of the motion to table this agenda item into a future point, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any of those who are opposed to the motion, signify by saying nay.
Nay.
Nay. Motion fails 2-1. We will move forward with the agenda. Anyone on the board need a recess, break, restroom?
I'm going to probably revisit the...
I'm going to go. I'm going to suggest that we take a five-minute break,
okay,
because I don't want to interrupt the cadence of testimony. So we will reconvene here in 5 minutes, which is 10:47.
Okay, I'm going to run.
Can you repeat that, Mr. Rouse? I apologize. I want to make sure that the recording was going. Yeah, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay. I'm Steve Rouse. I'm the president of Rogue Advocates. I'm here to testify as a co-representative today with Carolyn McNamara. I understand we're allowed 10 minutes. I might have to use all 10, but you might have to use your 5 just as a witness.
That's fine.
But I want to introduce Carolyn.
Great.
So I'm going to try to stay to the script and not get distracted into a lot of the discussions that went on, but that are ongoing. Rogue Advocates is a nonprofit organization whose primary mission is the sustainable use of farm and forest lands. We monitor activities in Josephine and Jackson County, and often through participation in land use processes. At the beginning, the chair asked if the board had, anybody objected to the board having jurisdiction. I do not object to the board having jurisdiction, but there is a jurisdictional defect in the appeal that was brought up at the beginning of the hearing. We request that this appeal be dismissed on jurisdictional grounds due to the failure to comply with our OBC 33.040 statement of appeal. The applicant failed to submit the statement within the 12-day timeline, and we find no statement of appeal in the record. This failure of compliance is confirmed by staff in the report. The staff report dated May 15th on page 1 states, statement of appeal. A statement of appeal was not received as required by Josephine County Rural Land Development Code. The statement requirement is found in the following section, which I was going to show you, but that's okay. It's RLDC 33.030A. And you can read it. There is a remedy in the RLDC code for this failure. The remedy for failing to submit the statement is found in 33.040E. And that states, failure to submit a statement of appeal in conformance with the requirements of this section shall be considered a jurisdictional defect, and the appeal shall be dismissed. Shall is a mandatory word. Basically, the board has no choice but to dismiss this appeal if they find that the statement was not included. And that was verified by staff. Simple enough. Dismiss the appeal, which means that the planning director's decision would stand with the conditions in place. In the alternative, that the board fails to dismiss this appeal, and please interrupt me if at any time you have any questions. In the alternative, that the board fails to dismiss the appeal, we request the board reverse the planning director's decision and deny the application. And we can present grounds in the Rural Land Development Code, which you have jurisdiction over, that provides you essentially the reasoning to deny this application. Brimstone Gulch is a Class 1 stream, and RLDC 72.040B1 states the riparian corridor setback area shall be 50 feet wide for Class 1 streams. That is a standard. It is mandatory. The 50-foot setback is a specific measurement. The planning director's decision addresses the exceptions to this standard requested by the applicant. In their staff report, staff notes on page 2, this is in the decision, staff notes the narrative of the proposal correlates placer mining to aggregate mining and asserts that aggregate mining may be permitted in the riparian corridor. In other words, the applicant equated aggregate and placer mining, not staff, not anybody else, it's in their narrative, as a reason to allow an exception. However, section 72.040B2G, the RLDC, expressly states that aggregate mining may be approved between the stream banks, but does not make provision for these activities to occur within the riparian corridor itself. That is a quote from staff in the staff report. Again, the RLDC does not make a provision for these activities to occur within the riparian corridor itself. Thus, planning staff disagrees with the applicant's claim that the RLDC allows mining within the 50-foot riparian setback as requested by their proposal. Indeed, staff claims jurisdiction over the riparian corridor per the code that you are here to enforce. However, staff continues in their notes and appears to allow an exception to the 50-foot setback standard per RLDC 72.040B3 under exceptions. Exception standards require two mandatory things. A, the development will result in equal or better protection for the riparian area because the riparian area will be restored, buffered, or enhanced through other special measures. And the exception will not authorize alterations to occupy more than 50% of the width of the riparian area measured from the upland edge of the corridor. Jeff, in his staff report, indicated that their 25-foot setback that they've included as a condition satisfied the 50% criteria. So it satisfied B. But staff, in their report today, or in the written planning director's decision, did not address A. And I question, how can the disturbance of everything within the riparian corridor possibly better protect the riparian area? You have a natural area that's been there for probably thousands of years. And now you're going to dig everything out, process it, and put it all back in, and somehow that's going to be better. I just can't see that exception can be met. And therefore, the application must be denied because it simply doesn't satisfy that exception. The placer mining proposal clearly fails to comply with both these requirements. This mining will increase stream turbidity during winter rains at a minimum, maybe in the summer or thunder showers, but certainly in the winter as the material reestablishes its natural compaction and rises. Brimstone Gulch has very steep areas greater than 3-1 slope, prone to erosion, and it's just not practical. It would be impossible to reestablish that natural protection that it already has in the riparian area. The application fails to comply with the requirements of RLD 72.040, and we request the board to reverse the planning director's decision and deny the application. Finally, as a practical matter, we strongly encourage the board to not consider affirming the planning director's decision and to deny the application, and certainly not to reduce the conditions of approval. The applicant, BNR, comes before you with dirty hands, as you know. ODF comments assert BNR lacks openness and transparency. The state forester has issued a statewide order prohibiting BNR from receiving any ODF permits due to those four conditions: failure to complete mandatory rest of reforestation, failure to pay civil penalties, failure to obtain an approved plan for alternative practices, and failure to provide documentation from Bogami. Simply put, BNR can't be trusted. And the question is, if all these conditions are in place and the application is left as approved, who is going to enforce those conditions? The applicant is saying, hands off ODFW, stay off. ODF doesn't really participate in riparian setback standards. It's really the county. And the county has no money for code enforcement. The backlog is unbelievable. How are you going to enforce conditions from a party that is known to violate conditions? So we request that the application be denied. There's many things that I also would like to say, but I will save those for rebuttal time.
We're sorry about that as well.
I would ask that you submit that for the record so we can get copies of.
I did submit them the written comments in writing, and I also included these RLDC sections on exceptions that I did not find in the record. I think that's critical that you have that information.
Yeah. I think that'll be helpful. Enough to chew on, certainly. Thank you, Mr. Rouse. So you had about a minute left in your time, and we used ample amounts with Mr. Dole's presentation with questions in the beginning. So if there's nothing else, I think we could move into those expert opportunities and go through the five-minute expert witnesses or the others opposition.
Absolutely, and I would encourage that the representatives from the state agencies be given the opportunity to testify today so that we don't have to call them back and waste our taxpayer dollars.
Yeah, I agree. I think that probably makes sense if those would indulge, that we could hear from the agencies who have been patiently awaiting. So we can get to that point. You didn't stand up in the opportunity to speak in favor of this application, so I assume your expert witnesses in speaking in opposition, which this would be affording you your time. You just need to come forward, state your name and address for the record of the agency that you work for will suffice. It'll be provided 5 minutes.
Commissioners, Steve Wetmore, Stewardship Forester for the Oregon Department of Forestry. And the Oregon Department of Forestry neither supports nor opposes the proposed mining. Our conditions are based upon forest practices issue that occurred on the property, and there's some points of clarification I need to make. Department of Forestry is not a permitting agency. All of our notifications, it's a notification, it is not a permit. And the plan for alternate practice is approved because it's an activity that is stepping outside of forest practices. So normally, the plan for alternate practice requires the plan, and as part of our memorandum of agreement, we notify all the natural resource agencies. And then it's up to the landowner to get written documentation from them that whether or not they have a jurisdiction. So in this case, part of our approving this plan required an approval of the riparian plan. The riparian plan was never approved, and therefore there was no plan for alternate practice, and the reforestation requirement remained. It should be noted that Brimstone Natural Resources has paid the civil penalties associated with that forest practices. So we're kind of into a catch-22. The repairs still weren't done, but the agency is willing, if a mining permit is permitted, that we'll accept that as the plan for alternate practice, at which point the state forester would lift the prohibition order, and at which point Brimstone Natural Resources would be allowed to file or be required to file their plan of conversion, all under the forest practices. So it should be noted that the Oregon Forest Practices Act specifically states that there is nothing within that act that can deny a plan for alternate practice or a conversion for a land use not compatible with tree cover, provided it meets all the other agency requirements. So that's written specifically in statute and rule within the forest practices. And the Department of Forestry has no intention of interpreting county code or mining rules. So contrary to Mr. Dole, we are not the lead agency on this mining permit. Our only connection is that they do the plan for conversion, and in order to do that, they have to have sign off by all the appropriate agencies, including ODFNW. So where that jurisdiction lies, you folks will have to decide. And Brimstone Gulch, according to State Forestry and ODFNW, is classified as a medium fish for cutthroat use. It's been surveyed upstream for cutthroat. So I believe with that, I will take any questions. Those were just the points of clarification that I wanted to make.
Mr. Morgan?
Who does the riparian plan approval? Which agency?
The steward, the riparian plan approval?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it depends what it's for. I'm going to throw another number which is going to make your head spin. The forest practices riparian management area for Brimstone Gulch is actually 70 feet because it's a medium fish stream, not the 50 feet. So ODF has a riparian concern out to 50 or 70 feet from the high water mark, and by ODF standards, that's defined as the average high water mark. Put it simply, it's where the vegetation scour line occurs normally. So that was a question that came up earlier. So as far as approving this plan for alternate practice, this local stewardship forester would be the one that would approve or deny that. And I was the stewardship forester in this area, and I was the one that denied it in 2015 because at that time the riparian plan was incomplete and not approved by ODFW. So ODFW couldn't sign off on it. Therefore, State Forestry can't sign off knowing that we're violating other county or other agency rules. So we're still, the big hinge pin is whether or not the riparian plan has jurisdiction. And according to the previous hearings, that was a jurisdiction put on us by the administrative law judge that the riparian plan had to be approved before we could approve the plan for alternate practice.
So confirming, it's not necessarily that you need anything from the county, but ODFW does have to have things in place for you to go forward.
Yes, to the second part, they have to have an approved riparian plan in order for us to approve the plan for alternate practice.
And that's my question, who does the riparian plan?
That is the counties.
Commissioner Dion? There's a condition here that speaks to vegetation and success. I'm not going to get into all of the jurisdictional elements. We'll work those out. I want to speak to item number 16, if you're familiar with, I believe it's the condition. The last sentence, and I believe this was done by our staff or through ODFW, but really you said you're the authority on success of reforestation. I know that from our forestry program here at the county. If survival drops below 90%, plants that do not survive must be replaced by the following February 28. I guess that's the year, if this takes more than 1 year, so the end of February. What exactly does that mean? I don't like conditions that are not clear, because it does talk about at least one plant per 64 square feet is the density requirement, but they can plant over that density requirement as long as they meet that minimum threshold. And so that last sentence leads me to believe that if they have, if they drop below a 90% mortality, even if they overstocked to that minimum of one per 64 square feet, they're going to be required to go in and replant. And I don't know that that's really your intent. Certainly wouldn't be mine the way I would manage a forest reproduction. We overplant so that we meet that minimum threshold and are not required to go back in as long as that minimum threshold is required. So that's what I would like to see clarification on.
Yeah, this one, as everybody's figured out, is very complicated. Normally, a plan for alternate practice, they have 2 years to complete the plan. So in this case, it would be they have normally 2 years to complete the mining and totally convert it. So it's not forest land. It doesn't look, smell, or act like forest land. And then they have to maintain it in that converted condition for 4 years. So as part of this, basically they do their mining, and then they do each little section. I believe there's five sections, and by the forest practices, they would have 2 years to complete the conversion of sections A through E into mining, taking it out of forest land, and then they have to maintain it. And that includes, by maintaining it, rehabbing it back into the additional conditions. So all of that is outside of our purview. ODF's going to sign off on, this plan is going to be drug out for long periods of time. If you have five blocks and you have up to 2 years to convert each one, we're talking 10 years. And then they have to maintain it after that, each block for 4 years, either in that rehab condition or in the mining condition. Otherwise, reforestation obligation would be reinstituted on the 4.6 or 4.4 acres, minus the pasture land.
A little tough to follow all that. And I heard you say that it's outside your jurisdiction, but what is not is the success rate. And that's
correct.
Really my question. And so I'd like it clearly delineated in this condition that the success rate is based on a density of at least one plant per 64 square feet and not talking about the mortality. That'll be regulated in the four-year success element. It's just this condition is not clear. So I will revise that, I think, if this is going to go forward. But
to try to clarify that, if this was a normal clear cut and they plant and they have the 2 years and they plant, they still have to maintain that for 4 years after that. If any time
I know
that
it's the density element that you need to specify, because this is a 90% survival rate, and that's not true. When you do an operation and you regulate the county, we'll overstock from a standpoint that if we experience mortality, we are still above your minimum density threshold. It makes good business sense for us to do that. That's what I want to talk about. I could have a very significant mortality, but I still overplanted and I met that minimum density success rate. So I'm looking for you to clarify, is it that 64 square feet? I mean, it's pretty simple. You want one stick per 64 square feet, and that's the threshold that needs to be satisfied in this condition, not a 90% or what have you mortality of the plant planted.
Okay. The forest practices standard is 125 seedling equivalents per acre.
Okay.
That would be the standard that we'd be looking for.
Okay.
You can plant more, and there is some provisions in the Forest Practices Act that they do have to meet a survival rate, kind of well distributed. There are gaps allowed, but 125 seedling equivalents per acre is what we're looking for.
Great. I think that's what I had. Anything else?
I think count the trees that live, not the ones that die.
Yeah.
Correct.
Good. Okay, thank you so much. You. Assume that it's an ODF and W representative back there. And your name and agency and...
I'm David Hayden. I'm a fisheries biologist in the Rogue Watershed of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Can you clarify your last name?
H-A-I-G-H-T.
Thank you.
And the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is the state agency that's responsible for managing Oregon's fish and wildlife population and also managing for the commercial and recreational use of the fish and wildlife populations in Oregon. And, you know, as such, we, of course, are interested in maintaining the habitat necessary to support those fish and wildlife populations. And for salmon steelhead, require clean, cold water to live in, clean gravels to spawn in. And so we're definitely looking at trying to maintain those kind of habitats. And a lot of our streams here in the Rogue Valley are listed as being water quality limited for temperature. And if you remove riparian shading and the thermal buffers from those streams, that exacerbates the temperature problems that we have. And so, you know, we're very concerned about maintaining the shade on the streams to maintain that temperature. And there's a number of state laws in place and federal laws in place to accomplish that. Mining can have, you know, a very significant impact on water quality, both in terms of temperature and sediment loads and so forth, if it's done, if it's not done properly. And if you mine right next to the stream, take out all the shade, you know, that's going to allow for more sunlight on the stream, it's going to warm the streams up, precipitation off the banks, which is important for bank stability. That allows sediment to run into the stream. It allows the stream banks to erode. You can get a lot of sediment, sand, and gravel migrating downstream. You can get widening of the channel. And generally, a lot of things that can be pretty detrimental to fish and wildlife habitat and, you know, to the neighboring landowners as well. So as part of the way the Department of Fish and Wildlife is involved in this is, as Mr. Dole's right, we are a commenting agency, not a regulatory agency, and we make recommendations to Josephine County on conditions for a variety of operations to try to ensure that they're done in a way that minimizes impact to fish and wildlife habitat, and we also make similar comments to other state agencies as well. And so in this case, the key county ordinance involved would be the riparian ordinance. And of course, the county adopted the riparian ordinance to be in compliance with statewide Planning Goal 5, which does require cities and counties to protect riparian areas and water quality. And the current ordinance was adopted in 2006 in working with the Department of Land Conservation and Development to meet their requirements. And the ordinance basically says that you can't do development in riparian areas, which excavating and filling material and removing vegetation is considered development within the riparian area. And it lists a set of exceptions that people can do in riparian areas, and those are normally things that are customarily associated with streams. It does list aggregate mining between the banks of the stream, and the reason it specifies specifically between the banks of the stream is that the Department of State Lands regulates removal fill activities within the bed and banks, and therefore it wasn't really necessary for the county to have specific rules duplicating what the Department of State Lands already regulates. But outside of the bed and banks, it is clearly the county is the agency that has the regulatory authority over protecting that riparian vegetation, unless, in the case of a forest operation, where there's a Department of Forestry has the rules that govern commercial forest operations. So, in this case, it's the county's riparian ordinance that's in compliance with statewide planning goals that gives you the authority to regulate this operation. Since there is no specific exception that would allow for placer mining within the riparian area, then it falls to the next section of the ordinance, which says that they can do the operation as long as it results in equal or better protection of the riparian area, and it also has to be in that outer half of the riparian setback area. And the question as far as whether it can be within 25 feet was addressed in a case where Josephine County planning, Josephine County commissioners overruled the planning department decision to allow a deck to extend, you know, into that 25-foot setback. That went to the Land Use Board of Appeals, and the Land Use Board of Appeals reversed the decision and said that you have to maintain that 25-foot setback. And so in this case, there's a number of, a big part of the problem here is that usually we get a fairly detailed mining plan of how somebody wants to go about mining an area. And in this case, Mr. Gold has not provided that, so we have to make some fairly general comments. There certainly could be opportunities for more intensive mining within the area if he provided more detailed information. You know, he was talking to you about...
So I'm going to give you another 30 seconds.
Okay.
Typically, you'll just get a minute after the buzzer goes.
Okay. So he was talking about, you know, how they normally go about doing that. He's told us that same thing, but he won't put that in writing. So we have to come up with some fairly general conditions to address how we could go about mining this area without causing significant degradation.
Questions?
What fish you talked about, steelhead and salmon again, but that isn't up this far in this stream, correct? Brown trout is what I heard earlier.
No, it's native resident cutthroat trout, which are a native species that are protected by the state of Oregon. Steelhead and probably coho salmon would have historically used Brimstone Gulch, but there are artificial barriers along Brimstone Gulch now that prevent fish from going up there. And the reason Mr. West's culvert is an issue is he replaced a bridge a few years ago and put in a culvert that's undersized that does not meet state fish passage requirements. That is the culvert that he would use to haul material from the mine site to his processing site, and it's on property that Mr. West owns, although by a different name. And so that's how that would tie in.
Salmon and Steelhead and Grays Creek?
Yes.
Mr. Morgan?
Sorry, just processing.
That's okay. So we learned from ODF that there was a 70-foot riparian, and your reference in your number of times of having, I guess this is where these conditions, number 12 and 13 and 14 come from, 50-foot riparian. Is there any clarification needed on that one?
Right.
Because I didn't read the 70-foot in any of the other.
Yeah, the Department of Forestry under the Forest Practices Act would require the 70-foot riparian management area, and it allows for certain things to occur within that riparian management area. The county ordinance specifies a 50-foot riparian setback, which is consistent with statewide planning goal 5. And the way this comes about here is Mr. West, if he was just logging the property, would have to comply with the requirements of the Forest Practices Act. But since he wants to do a land use conversion to mining, that would basically take him out of a part of the requirements of the Forest Practices Act, and instead he would be having to comply with the correct requirements of the county.
Do you have any, does your agency have a riparian setback that is different than what's explained in here? It's 50 foot. I understand the county's is 50 foot and ODF's is 70. You don't have
no.
a delineation, or how far does your jurisdictional concerned on a riparian area go?
The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife does not regulate riparian areas. We are just a commenting agency, so we make comments to Justine County, you know, giving our recommendations to protect fish and wildlife habitat, but we are not the regulator.
Okay.
And in this case, it would be the statewide planning rule 5 to specify the 50-foot setback.
Yes, Commissioner DeYoung.
Then if you're just a commenting agency, why is there a requirement that you, in here, it said that Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife wouldn't sign off on, so that's where it died. So, and then it went to Oregon Department of Forestry, and they weren't going to act on it because you didn't sign off on it, but yet you're just a commenting agency. I'm seeing a lot of this and shuffling stuff around with nobody taking responsibility for stating yes, no, 75 feet, 50 feet. I'm struggling with that.
So as part of the Justine County Riparian Ordinance, if somebody wants to do something within that 50-foot riparian setback area, Justine County has a form that the applicant would fill out that says what they want to do in that area, and then they would bring it to us to sign off. But we're saying, in our opinion, this meets the threshold that it provides equal or better protection.
And you didn't sign that?
No, I did not sign that because I don't
want it.
Because what they're proposing would not meet the threshold of providing equal or better protection to Brimstone Gulch. What they've provided, this has been very minimal. They want to mine right up to the banks of the creek. If you mine right up to, you know, within 1 foot of the creek, it's going to erode through that area. It's going to destabilize the banks. It's going to cause a lot of problems. Also, if they will, you know, want to work during the winter, and if you have a pit near the creek,
that's how you won't be any pit.
Well, you can't dig down to bedrock without having some sort of pit. Now, it is a common practice where you would fill that in as you go, but if you're continuing to mine, you're going to have some sort of a pit there, because you know they didn't put in their plan that they would fill that pit in completely at the end of the day. They're just going to sequentially mine as they go. So depending on how big of a exposed area on bedrock you have at the bottom, how deep the pit is, and how steep of an angle of repose you can get that material there to stay, you're going to be left with a certain size pit that is going to be there all the time during the period they're mining.
I think it was said earlier that the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife didn't want to get involved in you know, managing the whole stream and you know, putting that in your jurisdiction, but essentially have if you don't sign off.
I think that was ODF saying they didn't want to be in the management.
No.
Oh, it was
right.
This one?
Yeah, it was ODF. I think along those lines, you'd made a recommendation, I think, to our planning department to put in a restriction of June 15th through the middle of October, October 15th.
Yeah,
would that satisfy your concerns as far as that water, you know, that the wet season?
Yes, that would, because our normal arbor period for brimstone gulch would be June 15 to September 15, because it doesn't usually start raining until October 15. You know, we're willing to extend that to October 15. And if they have that pit there throughout that time period, the probability of having problems is pretty minimal. If they want to have a pit open, you know, during the winter and only operate when, you know, it doesn't look like it's raining, there's still a pretty good chance of having something happen. We do have operators that do that, but they have a plan in place for how they're going to address that. And we've requested a plan like that from Mr. Gold, but he has not provided it. So if he doesn't provide the plan, we would recommend that he be restricted to the June 15 to 7 to October 15 time period.
Commissioner Morgan.
Sir, I'm just curious. The no removal of damaging of woody vegetation within 50-foot riparian setback corridor. If there's a process of restoring the area, why would they prohibit any removal of woody if wood is what's required to be put back in?
There again, Mr. Gold has not provided you know, any kind of a plan of how he would go about mining that area between 50 feet and 25 feet. If he were to provide a more detailed plan saying what he intended to do there, we would be willing to look at that and possibly sign off on removing woody material within that area. But at this point, he's yet to do that and just basically refusing to provide any detailed information on how he proposes to do it. He's given us some, you know, talked to us in person about doing some of these things like he did with you just here, but he has not put any of that in writing.
Is there ever a time that ODFW, under the current practices with mining, believes that a riparian area can be left in a better condition than it was found?
In areas where it's, you know, been degraded in the past and people have gone in and mined, you know, remined an area that had been mined before and then, you know, replanted, it can be left in a better state than found. If you go into a pristine riparian area, it'd be really hard to mine without, you know, to do any kind of disturbance and leave it in, you know, equal or better condition. But.
And in this case, it's been stated that the damage was done previously, that there's meadow on one side, the riparian area has already kind of essentially been taken out. Are you aware of that claim?
Yeah, I'm aware that there are certain areas that are open, and so, you know, that would be an example of an area where we wouldn't be concerned about him mining within that meadow area outside of the 25-foot setback, so that he maintains streams of the stability. But as far as the areas that he recently logged and is claiming that he did that in preparation for mining, we don't feel that he should get credit as that being an open area, you know, because he violated the law and made it an open area.
And I think that's part of the question of, was it done 30 years ago by the previous owners, or what's been done now, which damage was done when?
No, the forest practices violation and what we're talking about clearly would apply to the recent damage that Mr. Hanson did.
I have a couple real quick. Item number 8, condition. No excavation shall occur in slopes greater than 3-to-1 horizontal vertical ratio unless measures are approved that would ensure slope stability and those that areas could be successfully reclaimed. Are you aware of any 3-to-1 in the proposed riparian area that brimstone, or is that part of the detail that you're looking for, delineating within what section those slopes might exceed that 3-to-1 ratio?
Right, that would be something that we would be looking at Mr. West to provide, because if you drive up the road there, look at the area he's proposing to mine. There are clearly some very steep slopes that come right down to the creek within the area that he's proposing to mine. And using the techniques that he's talking about as far as, you know, just going along, excavating down to bedrock, filling in behind you, you wouldn't be able to very successfully do that in those areas that are very steep. So unless he provides more detail of how he plans to go about, you know, doing that without causing problems and how he's going to stabilize and revegetate it, I would recommend that he just be prohibited from mining in those steep areas.
The third condition is pretty specific on that fish passage and the culvert. How do you know what you told us today, that it's in a different name, but the principles are of Mr. West? I mean, I don't want to... It's a pretty important condition if it's number 3. Misconstrue the idea that we you have information that may not be, how do we know that? And for us to, how do we know that we put that as a responsible condition on here? We're going to talk about that in executive session specifics, but what I need to know that information about, why are we conditioning something that you feel is obviously a violation and you're not pursuing that directly with those owners, and that would be separate of the condition for them to continue to use that road, and that would be the appropriate avenue to restrict access. You know what I mean? Like, you could go after that.
Right. So the state is pursuing the violation with the undersized culvert, and Mr. West is the person that the state is pursuing that with, because even though it's a different cap slot and from what Mr. Dole said earlier, different name of the company owning it, it is Mr. West's culvert that he placed. And it's the culvert that he would be hauling material over, so it is related to this operation. The reason we'd like that to be a condition is to help put pressure on Mr. West to comply with the rules, because just like the forest practices violation where they issued a citation, told him to do restoration and pay a penalty, he still hasn't done the restoration, and he just very recently finally paid the penalty. So it would help provide more motivation to Mr. West to comply with the law if you condition this permit.
Feels like a whole lot of chicken and the egg if we deny this and his incentive to perhaps fix that culvert. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's tied together in a not so pleasant way. It feels as though, you know, once you start down this road of getting into the riparian area, the specifics about what you're talking about doing, when you're talking about doing it, and how you're going to remediate some of these issues, the haul route, it feels almost like a full-blown aggregate operation. Kind of an application that we're getting into this very, very extensively. The challenge that I have, and the question I didn't ask the staff, is that how many placer situations do we have, you know, existing in Josephine County that we're currently regulating to this degree? If this is strictly a placer mine, like others, and it falls under typically state or federal jurisdiction or Department of State lands, come back to the idea, is this the appropriate governing body to have jurisdiction over this issue? And that's a challenge that I think we're going to have to get through. Mr. Ross makes some points about it.
By design, I think this operation is staying just under the Dogami threshold line. If, you know, if he was going over that 5-acre threshold, he would be having to go through this whole process with Dogami, and they would be requiring setbacks and reclamation plans and the detailed kind of information we're asking for here. So, you know, and this operation is 4.6 acres, but that 4.6 acres is just concentrated right along the creek, so it's, you know, impacting a pretty significant amount of creek. A lot of the placer mining operations in Josephine County, you know, historically have been in-stream placer mining operations using suction dredges. You know, that's been the most common type, and those, of course, are regulated by the Department of Environmental Quality and Department of State Lands, and the Mitchell County really hasn't had to become involved in those. Mm-hmm. A number of others are operating in placer gravels, you know, that were deposited a long time ago, you know, as the Siskiyou rose up, and so a lot of them are well outside of the riparian area, and so they are involved in the riparian ordinance. We do have a few that are proposing to work in the riparian area. A lot of those are on federal land, so the county doesn't have to be involved in that. But I can't really think of very many where we've had where somebody has been proposing this level of disturbance in within our riparian area. Mr. West did an operation up on Silver Creek where he completely mined through the riparian area without permits, and the county sent him, you know, several violation notices, and he's refused to respond to those, and so we still have an unreclaimed area up there, which, you know, contradicts what Mr. West is saying, that, you know, he has to do all this work to reclaim stuff because he hasn't there. And we have another one out on Avatar Mining where they did propose to stay outside the 25-foot setback area, and the county approved the plan to go to that area, but then he mined right through that area to the stream.
Mr. Young?
Yeah. Going back on this, it says here that they're going to restore the vegetation in there at the tune of 250 trees per acre. And I think you testified that 125 was your ideal. And then we get to your point about 90%. 90% of 250 trees is 230, somewhere in there, 235. So, you're done.
Yeah, 125 is what I think we clarified is the, what is your standard?
But it sounds to me like he's overdoing it.
Which is fine.
And then it also says something in here about you wouldn't sign off on it until he's fixed all the stuff that he had before. Did he do that?
No, he hasn't. I mean, I fixed any problems out there. Usually the person that's submitting the right grain landscape plan specifies how many trees they're going to plant, and you know, a lot of them will specify we're going to plant X number of trees, and
well, and you hear a number of different times you kick it back because Mr. Dole didn't specify. Are you requiring an actual, like a landscape plan you would for a building where you say this is where I'm going to put
a
spruce or anything? Because he's just stating what he's going to do, since conifers and slow-growing brimstone will supplement these by interspersing with alders and maples, which are quick-growing trees, I think, right? And at 50 to 75 foot intervals, although the OFPA does not require it, all trees will be from reliable established commercial nursery. Brimstone affects a 90% survival rate and will replace any trees within 3 years of planting. But also, brimstone will plant mixed conifers 8 to 10 feet apart, for a total of approximately 250 trees per acre. But what else are you requiring? Because then you shot this one down and said, no, I need more detail. What more detail do you need, sir?
But what we would want to see is Brimstone specify either, you know, that they will ensure that number of trees survive, or that if they just specify they're going to plant a number of trees, that then in that case they would have to say that they're going to maintain a survival. But we don't want to have...
I mean, they did at the 90%.
No, that's our condition. They don't
right.
say that.
Yeah. And so, to me, I'm fine with whichever way they want to do it. If they want to say, we're going to plant X number of trees and we'll have X percent of them survive, that's fine. If they want to say, we'll ensure that X number of trees become established, and then they want to, you know, how they decide they want to get there, as long as it's a reasonable way, they can either, you know, plant a whole lot of trees and assume that they're going to have a fairly low
30% death rate.
Right. Yeah, or if they want to plant fewer trees, but then they're going to be in the situation.
Maybe that's where they plan on getting the woody part from the dead and dying trees.
And in this case, we wouldn't want to just rely on the Department of Forestry requirements, because the Department of Forestry requirements are looking at, you know, basically commercial forest operations. And in this case, since it's mined within the riparian area, we would want to make sure that there is a diverse canopy of trees and shrubs of a variety of kinds growing back along the stream, and that you do have stuff growing along the stream. We wouldn't want to just say you can have, you know, X percentage of trees growing on an acre of land and having, you know, all those growing up on a hill away from the stream and having that, you know, one requirement of not providing a shade for the stream.
I think that's spelled out. Anything else?
I just do want to point out that Brimstone did provide the 90% survival in their last application.
Okay. We'll get there. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I think we're going to probably go for the next 15 minutes or so. If there's any other expert witnesses and such, we can do those. We're probably going to have to take a recess for lunch and then reconvene this afternoon. Apologize, because I was anticipating rain, and so people would be not so incentivized to get out of here. But be that as it may, it's still nice outside. So what do you want to do? Do you want to start out with witness testimony in opposition, or you want to recess, and we'll just reconvene here in about an hour and 15 minutes. What do you want, Mr. Ross?
I know folks would like to testify, and I don't think there's that many that we could probably get through it in like 30, 40 minutes or so.
Can I see hands of those who are planning on testifying? Oh, okay. We can do that.
And
that's five minutes apiece, so that's 25 minutes. So anyone else who's interested? I don't want to feel like people are rushed and restricted. That's not the point of these hearings. You really want to have an opportunity to speak. So,
my preference. I have a noon
appointment.
Correct.
Huh.
I can try to reach that person and say push it out.
That would be ideal.
So if you can give me a
minute to make a phone call, I will do that.
I think that's appropriate. We'll do that, given, because we usually do not go past noon, but we will do that to make accommodate so everybody can be here today. We'll get the testimony done, and we'll move forward. So,
and then are you thinking to do just take a break or stop?
I think we're going to stop at that point. That's what she requested, and we'll reconvene if necessary, or we'll have to talk with our legal counsel about what we're going to do next. That's basically where we're at. So,
well, we're agreeing with that. So
okay. I have to apologize because you were a co-representative and you didn't get to go. So you'll go first if that's okay. Be given 5 minutes. No, I'm not on that.
Dan does. Dan.
Oh, okay. So I was invited to that and I thought it was all online.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Is that okay? We'll get this done in
2025.
Yeah, we'll just do whatever we can to get through it.
They should be heard.
Ideally, we don't plan a lot on hearing it again. So, but that's not your regional solution. It has potential to be challenging. So we're going to start with expert, if there is one. There's actually a representative that I did not call on, so that'll be, but we're going to go under others in opposition. Each will be provided 5 minutes, so we'll start with you. You might want to speak into that mic a little bit more.
Not hearing
as close
you
as
all.
You can get. A little.
Okay. Let's see. We have a lot of issues that we are concerned about.
I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
I said we have a lot of issues that we're concerned about. He only asked me to move about 200 or 600 feet from this proposed plan, and we're going to be involved in this pretty much. We'll be living with them, basically. We want to say that we're very first and most importantly that we support OTFW, OTF, DSL, DL2, and Volgan in their reports that they supply. They are saying that they really want to have all these violations taken care of. And these violations, we've been looking at them for years. You know, the trees that he's been logging, and the slope is so high that it looks, you know, it's dangerous looking. As far as landslides or so forth. And so where they're going on, there is a really nice size slope. The culvert that he put in doesn't allow the fish to get up to the stream up to the area where all the bridges are. Excuse me. So that's why I feel strongly that having some fish to take care of. And if you were to go and look at Silver Creek Mine, you would look at the pictures of what he left and how the property looks now. If our property looks like that in 10 years from now, I'm pretty sure it came to Superfund site from EPA. So that's pretty bad, and that's what scares me about this. And especially considering, these serious violations. I want to say that the notices weren't received by other residents. I think half the residents or the landowners did not receive notices on this. We didn't receive information on this until about a week and a half ago. So we didn't have much time to prepare, but we're pulling together as much as we can. I am curious why the appeal is accepted in the time when it is late. You know, it said that it should have been accepted by, I think it was October 29th or something, and wasn't sent in until November 2nd. And, you know, I sent my comments in one time for in planning. I was 5 minutes late and didn't accept it. So why is he getting special entitlements? It doesn't make sense. You know, if deadline's a deadline, right? Right. report we purchased from the planning office did not have important information included. It missed the responses from DEQ and Bill Myers. And it was missing the attachment for Silver Creek Mine, as noted, a gateway to the email date of 11/14. It was number two. But he had requested for that to be included in the plan, the plan's office requirements, and that was omitted. According to plan, all violations should be addressed before a permit is granted. These items are summarized within the 21 plans, as noted in the report. Silver Creek violations were not incorporated in the justification's report as a requirement. How would this be included if it was outstanding? Pertinent detailed information is missing from the proposed plan. Everything related to where and how processing will take place. How could this application be considered without this information? The plan states the processing plant will be 1.5 miles away from the excavation site. According to the map, that will be on Brimstone Road. Where exactly will the trucks be traveling? The road is too wide enough for one vehicle for most of the length of the road. The road is steep and has many sharp turns. In past years, there have been vacant properties. Presently, all the properties have residents and traffic has increased substantially. This additional revenue is a major safety concern. If DNR equipment is disabled on Brimstone Road, there would be no resource if there was a fire emergency. The projected plan would involve use of the road for an additional 60 tons, like 60 truck trips, with approximately the 300 cubic yards that these plans demand. That's a lot of trucks on a one-way road, on a road that's so narrow that one car can get that when it's steep. If there was an emergency, if there was a fire, if there was an ambulance, there would most likely run into a fire, and that would be a problem. Could we please have a report and a study on the slope percentage? How will water runoff due to slope be contained in mined areas? How will excavating take place where the road is closest to the creek without reducing stability of the road? And this is a very narrow area that we're talking about. Where the road is to the creek. I don't really understand how we could do this without either having his trucks on the road while he's excavating. Will soil test be done after returning material to make amendments to vegetation to return if necessary? Because if you look at the pictures from Silver Creek Mine, there's no vegetation. It's just rocks, basically. DNR proposes to remove earth overburden, non-paying dirt, in order to account the level of pay dirt. Two concerns. In order to remove overburden, woody material would have to be removed. According to Fish and Wildlife, no removal of woody vegetation within a 50-foot setback is allowed. There are many trees and shrubs along the banks of Brimstone Gulch and in most of the cells outlined in the plan. How does DNR propose mining in this densely wooded area given the restrictions the Forest Practice Act, which provides important protection from forest operations to riparian areas, streams, and fish and wildlife populations they support?
Thank
you. And DNR secured a permit for vegetation removal from the DEQ and USACA.
Thank you so much for your testimony. I want to try to limit after the buzzer goes off to 1 minute in excess.
Okay, right,
so it's really just to tie up those points.
Ideally,
I'd like you to kind of really be quick in your conclusion.
There's nothing being said about the water level, the water table, and the our wells are in question as far as this is going to affect it.
Okay.
They're 400 feet from this stream. Another thing is the noise and the pollution from the trucks. This is right across the street. This is a quiet street. I mean, I know this is a personal thing, but if you live there, this is a major difference in our whole neighborhood.
Great. I think I read those elements in your, in someone's written testimony. I don't know if that can attribute that to you, but I'm going to have to move on to the next.
Are they going to be bonded? Are they going to have a reclamation bond for protection of people, for the area?
I think that's a great question.
Yeah.
So we'll have to investigate.
I hope we have a person that we could contact. One person that we could contact. We do not have problems.
Another good point, but thank you so much for your testimony. Regardless of how this process goes, there'll always be an opportunity for written comments before we conclude. So that's something to remember. If there's something you didn't remember, you'll get a chance.
I can still say good morning.
Barely.
Mr. West
Your name
just
and address.
To this board.
Your name and address, sir.
My name is Steve McNamara at the 403 Brimstone Road.
Great.
I'm Cal Hudson. He just stated when a question was put to him about the culvert that he said that it's not his. And then the fishery gentleman, Mr. Haight, said it is, and it is his tax lot. That is his culvert. He just misrepresented the truth to all of us. That's the shell game that BNR plays. They move it around. The way they're mining this, they could mine half the state 1 acre at a time and stay under the threshold of the rules and regulations. And that's blowing. Anyway, they're talking about they're going to mine 10 yards at a time and put it in their dump truck. Well, the average dump truck is, a triaxle, is 10 feet wide. My pickup truck is 7 feet wide. That's 14 feet altogether. Brimstone Road between the white lines is 13 feet. And on the other side of the white lines is a culvert all the way down, and then it gets into several blind spots, goes over the railroad track, and there's a steep switchback with no guardrails whatsoever on a steep hillside that goes right down into Graves Creek. We're talking if a dump truck can average between 10 and 12 yards a load, just say it's 10 to make it easy. If they're going to remove 300 yards of this gravel that they want, and the rest of the overburden is set in there, and they're going to take it to this processing place that we don't even know where it is. It's a half a mile down the road somewhere. Has someone inspected it? We don't have any information on that. Anyway, there's going to be approximately 30 trips out and 30 trips back with an 8-foot wide truck on a 13-foot wide road. It's a recipe for disaster. That's our only way out to the modern world, because all the residents on Brimstone, and there's been quite a few new people moving in, investing in their properties, and it's just a dangerous situation that should not be allowed to happen. Has there been a study done on the safety issues of these trucks going in and out? I don't think so. I haven't read one. And another thing is, I don't know, do you have a list of the people on Brimstone Road that you notified about this hearing? Because I, for one, did not.
We're going to ask for that. We're going to ask for that.
Because just calling around, five of my neighbors did not receive notice. Now everybody's trying to look on the positive, well, maybe I overlooked it. But when you get to five and possibly more, it starts to paint a picture that's worrisome. But anyway, like I said, Mr. West stated that that's not his culvert. It is his culvert. He just said that in front of all of us.
I think we heard you on that point. We heard you on that.
So, if he can speak the non-truth to this board, how can you trust him on anything else? And I have a stack that I didn't even get to. Thank you.
Well, you still have time, Mr. McNamara.
Time?
Yes, you do. I just don't. I might have read a paper. Repetitiveness is not necessarily, especially in a hearing.
Right. Is Brimstone Resources going to be responsible for any damages done to Brimstone Road? Those trucks, on the average, when they have 10 yards in them, are going to be close to 50,000 pounds. You multiply that by the times they go up and down the road until they achieve their goal of 5,000 cubic yards for the season. Are they going to be helping? Maybe that the bond would come into issue there. Another thing, the bridge, our only connection to the outside world is a bridge, and it's not maintained by the county. It was replaced after a flood. I'm not sure what year it was, but has there been a study on that bridge by a Josephine County engineer to say that it can handle the weight? Because I believe that they're probably going to use that bridge unless they have some other way to the processing plant, but we don't know where it is. But if they're going to use that bridge, there's not even a weight limit sign on that bridge. It needs to be checked out because all those trips over the course of 5 years, who knows what kind of damage is going on, and when we need it in an emergency, that's our evacuation route. That has to be addressed. Another thing, they're saying they're going to dig down to get to the pay dirt, and they're only going to operate when it's dry, in the dry season. They're going to pull that out, and it's going to be dry. But they're going to take it to this mystery processing plant, and they're going to sluice it down. They're going to hose it down. They're going to use water that maybe they have permits for, maybe they don't. How are they going to return that back into the ground in the dry form that they're supposed to have taken it out in? It's going to go back in wet and rinse. That has not been addressed. I mean, if they can't dig it out when it's wet, how can they put it back in when it's wet?
Another 30 seconds.
Thank you.
Good questions.
Hi, my name is Susan Hembry. I live at 3328 Leland Road. I did not get noticed during these proceedings either. And I want to apologize for my emotional behavior during this proceeding. Mr. Hare, I do apologize. I'm not used to being in these settings. I'm going to build off of Steve's remarks. The only mention made of a processing plant in this operation is that they're going to transport the material 1/2 mile away and return it within the same day, minus the recoverable gold, and backfill the mining areas. Now, I do have a background in mining. I worked in a hard rock mine. I worked in the mining industry for 10 years, and mining has provided a living for my family for 40 years. I want the commissioners to obtain the following information before you make any decision on this proposed mine plan. Brimstone Natural Resources will provide a map showing the location and footprint of their processing plant and the haulage roads to and from the plant and mine site. B&R will provide a list of the kinds of equipment that will be used to screen and wash mining material. Will it entail a screen and wash plant with a sluice box? What are the water needs of this plant? If they propose to run a dry operation, what kind of process do they propose? And how will they handle the dust abatement? Where will the fuel to run the equipment be stored? Will it be within lined containers? What are the protections for a fuel spill? B&R will provide information regarding noise level and air pollution potential for the processing plant and mining operation. Dust abatement is critical during the dry months. But furthermore, they will provide information about the water needs of their processing plant, where the water will come from, and how they will manage the discharged water. Sluice boxes require water. This processing plant requires water. Where's it going to come from? And what are they going to do with the discharged water when it's done? Are they going to require settling ponds?
I appreciate the emotional element, but talk into the mic
okay.
So we get it on the record.
Do they require settling ponds? Do these settling ponds require a liner, an impermeable barrier between the ground and the excess water? What kind of chemicals are they going to use in this process? Typically, fine gold is removed using mercury. How are they going to contain this mercury? Are they going to use flocculants, which are also chemicals added to water to float off different contaminants? So there's nothing in this plan that addresses any of that, and yet we're asking you to make decisions regarding, you know, pretty sophisticated concepts and ideas. And none of us are really experts here. I mean, I feel like the mine plan was written by an attorney. Probably was. So, or the appeal, rather. And then finally, the proposals to run during the dry season. Do they have a plan for fire prevention? They're going to be running equipment during the dry season that could set off sparks. We need to know how what their plan is to manage this. So, these are very, very important considerations, important to our neighborhood. I urge you, while you settle the jurisdictional issues, you also consider these really important issues regarding how they're going to process. It's nowhere, either in planning, did not address this either, so it's really a lack on both parties. So that's what I have to say. I am emotional. I'll try to be better in the future. I want to urge you to not permit anything until every condition is met, as outlined in your own planning decision, and to obtain information regarding what I've outlined above. Okay, I'm going to get this to planning and have it be part of the record.
Great. Thank you so much.
Susan, I just missed your last name. I was just Hembry.
Hembry.
will know me here because I am the supervisor of the patient.
Kind of speak into the
mic. For Josephine County Child Welfare.
I never want anybody to think they can't be emotional about these issues, just in how you express yourself and when and where. So, thank you for your testimony, Ms. Hendrick.
Hi, my name is Barbara Dickinson.
Good afternoon.
I'm at 181 Redstone Road, and I'm neighbors with the NR. We share property boundaries on the east and the north side. And I'm not used to public speaking either. And obviously, we're all very attached to the beauty and the peace and tranquility of this area. So I'll try not to repeat what other points that folks have made, but I do have some technical questions. According to the Department of Forestry, there is currently a state forester order prohibiting BNR from being listed as the operator, land, or timber owner. And unless the state forester has rescinded the prohibition, still stands. And the application, landscape plan, and any permits or permissions are null and void. So I'm really curious to find out if that prohibition has been lifted or not. I don't know. Some other technicalities having to do with the actual landscape plan have to do with lack of clarity and specificity in the plan that's concerning to me. In terms of grass and tree species, the size of seedlings, the estimated area in the plan about the species to be removed. We talked a little bit about that. Also, there's no erosion control plan or specific landscaping plan. I'm especially concerned about those areas that have a greater than 3-in-1 slope right there above the creek. The maintenance plan is not specific or detailed. It simply states applicant will plant natural grasses and will replace any trees that do not survive. Now, the narrative goes on to have a little bit more explanation, but it doesn't seem to me to be adequate enough. It doesn't address the maintenance of replanted areas. They don't address how these trees and grasses will be watered. They don't say how soon they will replant the trees that don't survive. And I think it's really important that this application include a site description with photos of the area, a plot depicting the high water level and the riparian corridor boundary, because it's unclear. A cross-section of the area to be mined should include the contours. I can see from the road that many of those areas are really steep, the places where they logged back in 2013. So there's a lot of bare ground there, and it's real steep. So even now, without any mining going on, I'm concerned about runoff going into that creek. There's just doesn't seem to be enough information here to make an informed decision. And there's also a large population of common rush that's in that meadow, that clear meadow area, which indicates to me that this is a wetlands area that's wet all year round. And I think that those wetlands are inside of cells A and B in the proposed mining area. All right, and now some more close to home issues. Brimstone Natural Resources states that this application is not subject to a full site plan review. But according to Article 42.030, the planning director may initiate site plan review when the director has reason to believe that the development involves a potential for significant impact on surrounding properties, public facilities, or transportation systems, or will adversely affect environmental concerns, such as wildfire, flooding, erosion control, or wetland wildlife habitat and watershed preservation, or other similar concerns. So I think that planning does have the ability to require a full site plan review. One of the conditions of this is back to a confusing note in the site plan narrative. The Fish and Wildlife say that they can work within a 50-foot riparian setback corridor to be limited to the period of June 15th to October 15th. And BNR promises to mine only in dry conditions. but also states in their plan that they will be mining in the winter and spring. Those are not dry conditions. Then they state they would agree to limiting mining within a 25-foot setback area from the creek to August and September, not the recommended 50-foot setback. So the plan is unclear about what time of year they will be mining in which areas. My remaining few seconds just to tell you that my well is about 400 feet up the hill from the proposed mining site, and as per Fish and Wildlife, no excavation shall occur below the water table. BNR's plan does not address water table considerations, and I'd love to see a water table study to clarify the depth of the water table in that area and measures taken to protect the wells in the community from being adversely affected. I have a hunch that the water table there is just a couple feet below. And my well is already not very well producing. I think I've got 5 gallons a minute. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Renee Cote. I live at 508 Brimstone Road.
Would you mind spelling that?
R-E-N-E-E-C-O-T-E. And you will have all copies.
Thank you so much.
And I would like to take 2 minutes and give a minute to Steve. And so, and I would like to not be interrupted.
Doesn't actually work that way. But.
Thank you for offering this opportunity to express what I think about this plan for a gold mine on Brimstone Road in Sunny Valley. I strongly oppose this request. I believe this request has to be rejected. When Brimstone Natural Resources did logging recently, it destroyed the beauty where we live, destroyed our quality of life when the logging happened. They have not done restoration, and now the same company wants the permission to continue its destruction of the environment by doing gold mining in a residential area. This is insane. A gold mine on Brimstone Road, a residential area, this doesn't make any sense to me. It will transform a residential area in an industrial area. Why? What will happen to the creek, to the water table, to the air, to the road? What about the traffic of trucks on a one-lane road with a steep hill and two blind curves? What are the reasons to start a gold mine in that area? Under what conditions such a mine can be justified? Don't we have to stop the destruction of our planet? And instead, don't we have to focus on sustainability, on saving our planet? We said that there is enough gold there to allow such a project that belongs to a past that needs to not be repeated. I count on the planning department and on the board of commissioner to do what we expect you to do, to work for all of us, for our health, for our survival, and for the survival of our planet. The destruction has to stop now. And now I have a dream that soon, we know each other very well. We talk about, Mr. West and I. So I have a dream that soon we will work together with Brimstone Natural Resources, that we'll have a new name. Brimstone Natural Resources Restoration. And together we will restore our environment and develop new ways to not only save our planet, but create health and beauty for our children, grandchildren, and all future generations. Thank you, and I would like to shake hands with you. Thank you very much. We will continue talking. We've been talking a lot. Steve, please give him his minute.
No, when you've spoken, those are the rules. Apology.
What is the distance that they're able to dig towards Brimstone Road? There's a lot been said about the riparian area.
Okay.
It's a small area. They're going to follow the goal.
It's all about distances, and we will give you the information because I understand.
I think I understood his question, and I had that same question.
I like to I want to give it to, I'm sorry, destroy it.
We will not destroy it, but we want to make sure it's in the record.
So. That's correct. Okay. Here, for the record, you can keep
it. It's okay. We'll get it done.
And it is for all of us, you too.
You need to speak in the mic, but I think what we did is we received some testimony and writing, and truly appreciate it. Anyone else speaking in opposition here today? That would be item number 3C. Seeing none, we're going to bring it back to the board, and we're going to table this to a date and time certain. I would like to do 2 weeks out.
Which is a holiday.
Which is a holiday, so that Monday will not work, thank you. I should have been working on this, but I need the board to endorse an idea.
Can we do Friday, June 2nd? The only thing I have is a medical thing, first thing early in the morning, but I could use that date.
You don't know.
I'd say it's okay. Not far enough.
Oh, wait, let me see. I can pull it up. Calendars now.
Wendy has it.
I think we could probably schedule that for, did you say 9 o'clock?
That would be fine.
So we're going to continue this hearing till June 2nd, 2017 at 9 a.m. right here in the Ann Basket. It is. June 2nd at 9 a.m. right here in River City, but more specifically this room, the Ambassador. With nothing further for today, the board is adjourned to 12:17. Thank you so much.